Ryan Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
Brian is the best. I love Brian Noonan. He's super funny, and he's just got tons of energy, and he's just a terrific guy. So listen to Brian on Sunday nights, because he does a really good show.
I want to thank Brian Noonan for going on.
Holy shit! Brian's back!
I'm better looking, I have better hair, I'm deceivingly smart, and I want everyone else to do what I say.
I understand about 20% of what goes on around here.
Well...
Good morning, Americans. It's Friday.
Good morning. It is Friday. Welcome. Glad you're with us. It's Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. In for Nick DiGilio, the final night of Nick's vacation. He will be back with you Monday morning at 1 o'clock. I have had a wonderful week, and tonight will be no exception. We have a big show planned, not the least of which is the return of the Overnight Arcade. That's right after the 2 o'clock news. Oh, my goodness. America's most popular radio quiz show, the Overnight Arcade, will return to the WGN airwaves for the first time in quite some time. So we're doing that after 2. In just a couple minutes, we are going to be joined by Chicago beer historian Liz Garibay. She is the one of the founders of the Chicago Brewseum. They have a big new exhibition at the Field Museum. We'll talk to her all about beer and beer's history in this wonderful city. If you want to get involved in the program, I hope you do. You know it's easy. 312-981-7200. That's the phone and the text. When you call in, you'll be talking to Dan. I still don't have a window in my car long. He is the executive producer of the big broadcast. He's still fragile. Be nice to him, you get to me. That's how it works. But we are all very, very excited that we enjoyed our Thanksgiving dinners. We'll talk a lot about Black Friday after 3 o'clock and how the stores are trying to trick you, how they're trying to get in your head to make you part with your money. We'll talk a little bit about the screen time debate for children, and maybe talk a little Bears, too, and we will do our stuffing swap after 2:30. Because if you were with us yesterday morning or last night, however you want to look at it, somehow we started talking about White Castle stuffing, and it turns out Dan's uncle creates it. Was it there today? Was the White Castle stuffing on tap?
It was there. Am I on?
Yeah, you are.
I can't hear myself.
All right.
That would help. It was there today. And he surprised me, and I'm not sure if he does this every year, but he told me he cut the recipe. So it's White Castle, but he also cut it with some regular stuffing ingredients. So I'm interested.
Yeah, we'll get all the
response.
We'll get all the details on that coming up after 2:30. How's that ice treating you? Good? Yeah, you're parched. You got to stay hydrated. We got a long night, Dan. Like 3 hours and 45 minutes left. We got things to do, and then it's Friday morning.
Right.
Things are going to kick off. I know my wife and daughter, I just found out my wife and daughter are leaving the house at 5 o'clock to do some Black Friday shopping. Ridiculous. People have been out. I miss the days, I honestly miss the days when Black Friday didn't start till midnight. Because back in those days, I would do this shift, and, you know, people were lining up. The expressways were packed with people trying to get out at the outlet malls. There were lines at all these malls, and it was a fun adventure. Now, you know, you could start shopping on, you know, at noon on Thursday on Thanksgiving. So it takes the oomph out of it. But for some reason, there's some store that my daughter wants to go to, and she's not Black Friday shopping for gifts for anybody. She's Black Friday shopping for herself. So we'll see how many people are actually doing that. I already talked to a buddy of mine this evening, or earlier this evening, who said he had done the same thing. He had gone Black Friday shopping, but just for himself. I was like, oh, I wonder how many people do that rather than it used to be. Back in my day, Dan, where we would go Black Friday shopping, it was you were doing it to get gifts for other people. Now it's like, oh, well, all the good deals, we have to, we got to get it on our own. We got to get the Black Friday gifts here because the deep discounts. I don't know. So we'll talk all about Black Friday after 3 o'clock. Did you have, other than having to come back here tonight, did you have a good Thanksgiving, Dan?
It was pretty good. Yeah, low key.
Yeah.
No pressure.
That's nice.
It was nice.
Very nice. A little relaxing. Don Kleppen is in the newsroom with us this morning. Vic has taken the day off, which we never blame a guy for taking some vacation. Happy Thanksgiving or Black Friday. Happy Black Friday, Don. Good to see you.
Happy Black Friday to you too, Brian. Are you post-Thanksgiving?
Yes. Did you have a lovely day?
I did, yeah. I made it up to my mom's house in Morton Grove, watched some football.
Perfect.
Scarfed some food.
That's the way to do it. And then did you get your post-Thanksgiving feast nap?
Oh, absolutely. It was great. I was down for the count for about 3 or 4 hours before I came in here today.
Perfect. See, that turkey, I know there's debate about that, but that turkey does knock you out.
Tryptophan, man.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
It is. And so we took I took my little post-feast nap, and very excited. Oh, Dan, we were all worried last night about the Bears. No need to worry.
Mm-mm.
Bears coming through.
Best defense in the league right there.
Oh, man, come on. Another key interception. The defense winning the game. And then dancing like the Temptations.
Their celebrations are also top in the league. I defy anybody else to be to those. The rowing that they did on Sunday night against the Vikings, the chorus, like the composing that they've done. I mean, it's just so fun every time.
It is great. We'll talk more about the Bears later. We're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to find out how beer-shaped Chicago with Liz Garibay. She is a Chicago beer historian. We'll do that after this. It's WGN. Yeah. If you know me, you know I love beer. Dan Long, I think I can safely speak for you. You love beer as well. We are beer aficionados. Well, another woman in Chicago who not only loves beer, but loves sharing the history of beer in Chicago with you is a noted Chicago beer historian, Liz Garibay. She joins us now on WGN. Liz, thanks for staying up. Hope you had a nice Thanksgiving. Up, oh, wait a minute. There did I? There we go. There you are, Liz.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? Sorry, a little technical glitch. It's all the turkey. I'm still a little logy from the big dinner.
Understandable. Thanks for having me on. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving.
We did, and I hope you did as well. I found this out. You and I are both former members of the Wolfpack at St. Ignatius.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Wolfpack, you know, love it.
I was there. I was actually there when they started allowing women to attend St. Ignatius.
Oh, you were on that turn.
I was a junior when the first class.
Well, you were then fortunate to see the improvement.
I'm not going to lie to you. There was an improvement in hygiene. My classmates and I had no incentive to bathe or comb our hair up until that point, and then you introduce females into the mix, and all of a sudden, teenage boys are like, "Hey, I need to step my game up."
Well, y'all, thank you for your service on that.
Well, you are very welcome. And it does added a nice layer of not only intellect, but a more well-rounded environment, I think, overall.
The hygiene, we are supposed to be men and women for others, so appreciate that.
Yeah. Now, so you started getting interested, and we're going to talk a lot about the Beerzeum.
Brewzeum,
and the new exhibit at the Field Museum. But you started getting involved or interested in museums and museum curating in high school?
Yeah, I was, I was fortunate enough to get an internship when I was 15 at the Field Museum. They gave me my start, and, I was a latchkey kid, and summers I stuck close to home and started interning in the anthropology department and really just loved it. I always kind of had that connection to the ancient past and to the Field Museum, and started out there for a summer internship, and it was sort of like the internship that never ended because I just loved it so much that I would go back whenever I could. So Christmas breaks or spring breaks or, the following summer. So I ended up just sort of being this intern throughout high school and college. So the bonus, the beauty of that was that when I did graduate from college, they did give me a job. So all my hard work paid off.
There you go. As it should. That's supposed to be what happens. So it's always great when a story pays off the way it should. So you're working in museums, and listen, the Chicago has great museums. There's wonderful exhibits, all kinds of things. Not normally associated with beer. How do you make the transition from the anthropology department and the Field Museum and all this, and then say we've got to incorporate beer somehow?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very circuitous path that I took. My original career route was sending me along the archaeology way, and I just realized I didn't want to be an academic and in that academia world. So I realized that my true love was being a museum professional, and so I had spent some time working at a variety of museums in Chicago and on the East Coast, and came back home. And I started working at the Chicago History Museum as a public historian there. I was responsible for handling all the public programming for an adult audience and trying to really get a younger audience in as well, and a diverse audience. So along the way, with all of that, I just really kind of found this unique way of looking at history. I mean, mostly it was rooted in the fact that I really kind of just love to go to a bar and drink. You know,
I understand
there's something special about almost like creating a bar family. You know, it's a special environment. And you know, when I was in school, I would often, you know, be in a new city and go study by myself, and it was just a comfortable place. And one of the things that happened early on was that I would sit at this bar, and I would hear, you know, a lot of the old-timers who had been sitting there for 30, 40, 50 years tell stories about people who had come and gone and the neighborhood changing and all that good stuff. And I just realized that a lot of the stories were valuable oral histories. And I started kind of jotting things down and asking more questions. And I also realized I had been drinking for 30, 40, 50 years, so I really didn't know what was fact or fiction.
Right.
So I started going to do some research to see what I could find. And a lot of times I would find the stories they'd been telling me. A lot of times I wouldn't. And many times I would discover new ones. And so I kind of just started going down this weird path of doing this sort of like bar history research. And I quickly discovered that if you find out the history of one bar and connect the dot to the history of another bar, you suddenly have a history of a neighborhood. And then if you go even further, you connect those dots and you get the history of a city. So I was really sort of passionate about the fact that you could use these taverns, these community spaces, these gathering places as ways to really look at urban development. And for me, the beginnings of our American history and certainly our major urban centers were sort of things I really wanted to look at. So I really kind of just started looking at history through the lens of alcohol.
I like
it. And it evolved from there.
That sounds much more, not that academia is not interesting, but for me, your path sounds much more interesting than the initial path that you were on. Liz Garibay is the founder and executive director of Chicago Brewseum. You can go to chicagobrewseum.org. She is also the founder of History on Tap and History Pub Crawls. A new exhibit coming is at the museum, the Field Museum, and we'll talk more about that and the history of beer in Chicago with Liz on the other side of the news. It is an interesting topic that is close to both Dan and my heart, and I know yours as well. And if you have been in any of these Chicago neighborhoods, you know, as Liz was saying, that the pubs, the taverns, are the heart and soul of some neighborhoods. So we'll talk more with Liz on the other side of the news on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. We are talking the history of beer in Chicago with Liz Garibay. She is the founder and executive director of Chicago Brewseum. They have an exhibition going on now at the Field Museum, Brewing Up Chicago, How Beer Transformed a City. You can see it now through January 5th at the Field Museum. Liz, thanks again for staying up with us. It is a fascinating exhibit, as I've been going through the website, chicagobrewseum.org. Tell people a little bit about what the exhibit holds.
It tells the story of Chicago from 1833 to 1893. And we were very specific about those dates because 1833 is the year that Chicago was founded, not as a city, but as a township. So before we were a city, we were a township. And 1893, of course, is the World Columbian Exposition. So those dates were important to us because it really is the beginnings of Chicago, and it really is sort of this turning point for our city post-fire, and really just sort of this transition period moving forward into the 20th century. And it's incredibly important for development of the city, but also the development of the beer industry. So the focus really is looking at the immigrant community, mostly the German immigrant community, who arrived in Chicago and really kind of just created the beer industry and built it, and along the way also built the city. So it sort of follows three narratives of Chicago, of beer, and of immigrants. So it's kind of a unique way to look at how each of these sort of parts all come together, and for me, it sort of like makes you think a little bit about, okay, if one didn't happen, would the other one would have succeeded as it did? So it's kind of a unique way of looking at not only Chicago history, but beer history for sure.
And it's divided up into four sections in the room. There was, it's funny that you tie all this together, the city, the beer, the immigration, because the immigrants were facing a lot of backlash, not unlike things are happening now, but that led to city officials or township officials at that point trying to pass prohibition laws, trying to get rid of the beer, and it was kind of a shady way to get rid of immigrants as well, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm actually glad you brought that up, because the whole reason we actually chose that immigrant narrative was so that people would make connections to present day. You know, history does repeat itself. Mm-hmm. And in the mid-1800s, you had a lot of German, Irish, and pretty much everybody, every immigrant you can imagine, coming to Chicago and creating their built environment, creating the city that, you know, it's a new place. Chicago was nothing but a swamp in the 1830s. And so here they are coming and really kind of starting to work together to create this new city. But at the same time, there are already people who had been here for a while and didn't really like the newcomers. And so by the 1850s, you had a lot of anti-immigrant laws being passed, or anti-immigrant sentiments. And so it was really kind of an uphill battle. So there's a big moment that happens in 1855. It's the city's very first moment of civil unrest, and it really is sort of all started by this anti-immigrant mayor who we have, and he really kind of just tries to stick it to everybody. But they organize for the first time ever and fight back, and, you know, pretty much force them to not change those laws. So what ends up happening for me is that's really an important story, of course, because of that moment of civil unrest, but mm-hmm. It's called the 1855 Lager Beer Riot because it's all rooted in people's freedom to drink and when they could drink, and even more importantly, I think, is that they stay organized in the following year when this mayor, Levi Boone, was up for re-election, and they finally went to vote before they didn't, and they made sure he wasn't re-elected. So for me, the 1850 Lager Beer Riot actually is the moment that kind of sets the tone for Chicago's identity as a postal machine.
Well, and I was not familiar with the Lager Beer Riot till I was reading up to talk to you. And it is a fascinating moment in history, and it really did. There were so many similarities between that event in 1855 and what we've been seeing over the last few years, and actually the last couple decades in this country.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. You think about what happened, you know, in the 1850s, and here we are in 2018, and we're fighting a lot of the same battles and going through the same struggles. And, you know, it's definitely a very complicated story. So we actually share that story in a video format, and we're actually really lucky that that video was narrated for us by local actor Michael Shannon.
Oh, very nice. Now, you had a history with the Field Museum. You'd worked there before. And so was it... when you approach them with this exhibition, because the Chicago Brewseum, which we'll get into later, is still, it's evolving. It's still a project that is waiting to come to total fruition. Was it a hard sell to say, listen, I know you've got dinosaurs and you're world-renowned. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about beer a little bit in the museum.
Yeah, you know, it's actually a really neat partnership. And I didn't go to them. They came to me, which is
awesome.
Nice. Yeah, and the reason was, you know, I've been working on the Chicago Brewseum since 2014, building a team and really trying to, you know, iron out who we are and our mission, vision, brand identity, all that stuff that you need to do for any startup. And we worked pretty hard for 2 years and went public in May of 2016. So we had an official launch in May of 2016, and, you know, we invited all kinds of folks from all over town we thought would be interested. And at that point in time, the Field Museum had actually already been very proactive about having their own beers at the museum. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I was very much into. I admired what they were doing. It's certainly, you know, something that I believe in my line of work, my field of study. And so I found out who the director of that whole enterprise was and found her email address, and I invited her to the party, to the launch, and she arrived. She actually came and introduced herself to me at the party, and the next day she sent me an email and said, "We need to go have lunch." And we did, and we kind of said, you know, we need to work together. We love what you're, you know, she said to me, "We love what you're doing, certainly believe in it." And I really feel that as a larger, more well-known and historic institution, part of our responsibility is to help foster the new guys. So we really kind of started working together on events and just kind of fun things. And that partnership naturally evolved into a conversation about, okay, so would an exhibit ever be possible? And we just kept kind of going with it. And earlier this year, they said, all right, we should really think about doing this. And next thing you know, we were doing it.
That's an amazing story. Again, when people, you know, at first blush, you go, oh, beer, you get beer everywhere. You don't realize how woven into the tapestry of the city that it is because of all the immigrants that came here. And, you know, you talk about the first German immigrants, William Haas and Andreas Sulzer, who came, and they started basically the first brewery in this city, correct?
Correct. That was about around 1835-ish. You know, they were German immigrants who came via New York, and they had some money in their pocket, and they basically just got on a schooner, loaded up all kinds of barrels of ale and some equipment, and came to Chicago. And, you know, one of the great assets of having all these immigrants come is that they brought a lot of their skill sets and their knowledge. And lucky for us, the Germans were the earliest to arrive here, and, you know, they brought that skill set of making beer. I have a whole lecture on an argument that pretty much says that, you know, when we think about Chicago industry and the beginnings of Chicago, we often think about, you know, stockyards and railroads and architecture, and we really just need to throw beer into that mix, because without the beer industry, I don't know that Chicago would be where it is today.
Was it difficult as you began working on the Brewseum and History on Tap and all the things that you do? Again, beer just kind of seems, unless you're in the brewery business, most people don't pay a lot of attention to it other than when they're drinking it. Was finding a lot of the things for the exhibit, the photos, the stories, was it more difficult than if you were trying to do a more quote-unquote traditional line of study?
Not really, only because I've been doing this since, you know, like 1999, 2000. So I've sort of already carved a path of where I know where to look for things, and I've developed relationships and have an idea of where I do research. So I knew the stories that we wanted to tell, and I knew the partners that we should reach out to, not only on, you know, things and objects that we wanted in the show, but really about people who would understand what we were trying to do. You know, how the show happened in 2006, I started working at the Chicago History Museum in 2006, and I immediately pushed for a new type of tour, a new type of program called History Pub Crawls, where I would take people out to bars, and we would visit these bars, and I would talk about history along the way. And, you know, when I first pitched that idea, people thought I was crazy. You know, like, you know, I remember my boss saying, "Wait a minute, you want to take people out drinking?"
Yeah.
I said, "Well, that's part of it, but listen, just hear me out." And so I really had to pitch it several times, and it was with a very tight leash that they let me do a couple of the tours at first, and then it was sort of like seeing them unfold, people started to understand it. And it became a very popular thing. And obviously, you know, now you see alcohol in museums all the time. But,
yeah,
you know, at first it was really kind of like, the whole notion of having alcohol involved in any sort of educational aspect of anything was really thought about as like having it being dumbed down. And so it was really this weird negative view of what it was. And it's sort of something I've really tried to battle throughout my whole career. And luckily, people are starting to sort of break down those walls of looking at alcohol as sort of as just this, you know, elixir that makes you feel funny. You know, and part of the whole Brewzium's mission is that beer is more than just a beverage. It's a powerful cultural force with the ability to build community and make change. Well, and that's really what we're trying to do.
And I think that's you know, you said it, it's your, but it is a huge important deal, because you think about when you talked about the taverns being the heart of the neighborhood, and that's where the history of the neighborhood goes. And I just got back from the UK, and I know you are on the the Drinking Studies Network, which is a UK organization.
Yeah.
But pub history over there is so much different. But it's not in the fact that it's still a neighborhood thing, and there are people who live there, and they share the stories, and it's where politics happens, it's where great debates happen, it's where arguments happen. So to tie beer in with, you know, cultural studies, now I guess in hindsight it's easier to say, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, you know, when you think about a lot of these early taverns and pubs, you know, no matter what part of the world you're in, but even, you know, you think about closer to home, the United States, you know, these bars were these really important community centers where people would go and, you know, be around people who looked like them, who would talk like them, think like them. They might have newspapers that, you know, were in your native language. You want to be with, like, people. Think about it today. You still do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so there were very important places where people would collect information, share information. I call these, a lot of these first taverns, the original Facebook. It's where you would, you know, share information, get a lot of gossip, network. You know, if you had someone in sort of back home in, say, you know, Poland, and you knew they were going to try to come to the United States and get a job, you would go to these bars, and you would start asking questions and try to make those connections and get him or her a job. And so they're very important gathering spaces for decades, you know, since the beginning of American history, for sure. So looking at them from a very historic perspective makes a lot of sense.
Now, you mentioned beer in museums, and you said that the Field Museum does have it. We, unfortunately, when we're walking through the Brewing Up Chicago, how beer transformed a city, the exhibition at the Field Museum, we can't grab an icy cold beer. But the museum does have two specific local beers in the bistro that people can enjoy. And it's important. I think it's a great tie-in because, you know, this is still an unbelievably great beer city. So to highlight local breweries is a great tie-in.
Yeah, for sure. The Food Museum is doing a great job with working with a variety of different breweries. They have two currently, I think, in the bistro, but they certainly haven't made just two. I think they're into like six or seven.
Oh, nice.
With a variety of, breweries, not just in Chicago, actually. The one very popular beer called Pseudo Sue is actually made by a brewery in Iowa.
Okay.
So it's definitely a regional thing now. But yeah, unfortunately, you can't drink beer in the exhibit, but you can drink beer near the exhibit, so that's good enough.
It's very nice. And the exhibit, again, runs through January 5th, so you've got plenty
2020.
Oh, through
2020.
Really? I got to update this, the article that I was reading said 2019. So, oh, you got a while. You can go more than once. Go.
Absolutely. You had a full calendar year.
So let's talk a little bit about the Brewzium. I know it's, you know, you said you went public in 2016. How's the progress going? What do you envision or hope for the Brewzium to become?
Yeah, so, you know, this opportunity with the Field Museum came our way, and I certainly went full throttle with it. And that's really kind of what we've been focused on this whole year, and coming up in 2019 and 2020, what you're going to be seeing is a lot more of sort of an approach to looking at beer, still in the way that we do from a historic and cultural perspective, but you're going to see us partnering not only with the Field Museum, but with an array of other fantastic cultural institutions across the city to really sort of focus on the fact that beer is applicable to all types and fields of study and is accessible to all people and all audiences and available to you in various pockets of the city, in different neighborhoods of the city. And so we're going to be launching these events and these programs and tours and all kinds of fun things in different spaces and places throughout the city. And, of course, along the way, we will be finalizing a location for our official brick-and-mortar museum that hopefully will open in 2021.
Very nice. And if people are interested in getting all sorts of information, if you want to donate, you can go to chicagobrewseum.org. Everything is there. Also, all the information about the exhibition at the Field Museum. And you're still doing tours through History on Tap?
Yeah, you know, that's sort of my little baby there. And History on Tap allows me to get creative with a lot of the ways I do look at beer or alcohol. I always say, you know, I'm definitely a beer historian, and beer is certainly a passion, but wine and spirits do make cameos along the way. Because, you know, well, let's face it, human beings have been drinking ever since we could pretty much walk.
Yes.
And we've been drinking all kinds of things. So it's not just limited to beer. But, yeah, I'm able to get a little creative and do some fun lectures or fun tours. And, you know, it's unfortunate, too, that I don't do them just in Chicago. It's become now a national and international thing.
That's very cool. Are you surprised by how much beer is being brewed in this city at this point? I mean, it seems like every other week a new brewery is opening.
Yeah. No, I'm not. You know, Chicago is an amazing place for so many reasons. And, you know, one of our board members is John Hall, who started Goose Island in 1988. And he was a real pioneer, not just for the beer industry in Chicago, but for the beer industry in the United States as a whole. And, you know, it was sort of these guys in the late 80s and early 90s who kind of set the tone for, hey, you know, let's do this. Let's get back to these roots where people are making stuff that, you know, people just like to drink. And I'm not surprised at all that Chicago is such a great entrepreneurial city and sort of has all these breweries popping up in every single neighborhood you possibly imagine. And that really is, again, history repeating itself. So we all want to support local. We want to be able to go down to the corner tap room and have a locally made beer. So not surprised at all. And, you know, if you're a beer lover, this is sort of the golden age of beer right now.
It definitely is. And going back to a phrase you used when we first started talking, the bar family. If you're going into your neighborhood tap room, you see a lot of the same people. And, you know, you may not become the best of friends, but you'll be able to sit down and talk to a familiar face. You can talk to these men and women who are brewing this beer in your neighborhood. And, you know, they're invested in the neighborhood. You're invested in the neighborhood. It's a great community, you know, it's a community center, but with alcohol. It's perfect.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I love about beer, too, is that if you think about it, no matter who you are, where you come from, how much money you make, what you do for a living, you know, what color your skin is, most of the time, people are going to have a personal connection to beer.
Right.
It really kind of, you know, reaches all audiences. So whether you're walking into that taproom or that bar, doesn't matter who you are. You're all there for the same reason, and you're either going to have a conversation rooted in something you have in common, or you're going to learn something new. And, you know, that's the beauty, truly, of what bars and brewery tap rooms and beer really kind of provide us, is this sort of like this magical connector that just kind of breaks barriers and lets us just be. And that's kind of like, I think, the magic of it all, truly. And for me, you know, going in as a patron, going in and having that happen is pretty special. And then, you know, you can get people getting really geeky about the beer, too.
Right,
you know, getting
exactly.
People, like, examining it, you know. And it's kind of neat because it's finally, like, beer is really kind of getting its due. You know, a lot of people who love wine, you
sure.
Sit there, you sip it, you swirl it in your mouth, and you talk about it, and, you know, what are the you know, profiles you're getting, and, you know, you can go on and on and on. And, you know, I think people are finally doing that with beer.
Yeah, and it's great to see. It's great to see, and it's great that somebody,
yeah.
That you are elevating it past, you know, not just an art form in the breweries, but now as a cultural beacon as well. If people are interested, you are doing a tour. If they go to historyontap.com, you're doing a tour on Saturday through Old Town's historic taverns, and all the proceeds from that go to benefit the Chicago Brewseum. So you can go to historyontap.com, get all of Liz's information, listen to the podcast as the Ale House turns, and get information on that, and go to chicagobrewseum.org to find out the future of another wonderful project. And, of course, don't forget to go to the Field Museum from now through next January. We don't even have to put an end date on it. Just go and visit Brewing Up Chicago, How Beer Transformed a City. Liz, it's been great talking to you. Please keep in touch. This is an unbelievable project. Best of luck with it.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. We'll talk again soon. That's Liz Garibay. All right, let's do this, and then we will tell you who's going to play the Overnight Arcade.
Shall we play a game?
It's a new game, only this time the game is real. Can you handle it?
Everybody play the game.
Play.
Time to play the game.
Oh my goodness. Yes, it is the theme for America's favorite overnight radio quiz show, the Overnight Arcade on WGN. I am your quizmaster, Brian Noonan. With me tonight, keeping score, producer extraordinaire, Dan Long, in the booth. This morning, we are playing the Tri-Bon Challenge. If you did not get through to play with us on the air, then play along at home, because during the Overnight Arcade, at-home wagering not only encouraged, but expected. If you are in line, waiting to get in to make a Black Friday purchase, crank it up. See if the people you are standing alongside are smart enough to beat you at the Overnight Arcade. Shall we meet our players? I believe we shall. First, we go to North Riverside and say hi to Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I am fantastic. What do you do for a living, Steve?
Jack of all trades, master of none.
Ah, very nice. The elusive CIA agent, Dan. We have an undercover government agent on the line. Very exciting. Steve, this is going to be confusing, but you are playing against Steven. What happened? We lost Steve. Can you get him back? I don't know how I had locked him in. Steve, call back. Steve from North Riverside. I had locked the phone, and suddenly, we'll talk to Steven while we try to get Steve back. Hi, Steven. How are you?
Good, good, good.
Good. What do you do for a living, Steven?
I am a patrol officer for a security company.
All right. Are you working tonight?
I'm on the road right now. Yes.
Yes. All right. Well, listen. Drive carefully. I don't want your brain so focused on the Overnight Arcade that something unsavory happens on your beat.
Oh no, that would be not very appreciated.
No, not at all. All right. I think we have Steve back on the line. Steve, are you there?
Sam,
all right, I apologize for that. There we go. Now everybody is locked in. We're locked and loaded. All right, gentlemen, here we are. I'm very excited you are here. We have not done an Overnight Arcade in quite a while. This morning we are playing the Tri-Bond Challenge. Here's how the game works. I will give you three things. Your job is to tell me how those three things are connected. For example, if I were to say Mr. Green, Miss Scarlet, and Colonel Mustard, you would tell me that they are characters in the game Clue. All right? Characters in the game Clue. If you get a question right, you get a point. If not, your opponent gets a chance to steal. First one to five, or whoever is leading when time runs out, will be our winner. I must ask you, gentlemen, do you understand the rules? Are you ready to play the game?
Yes.
All right, here we go. Let me flip and see who will get the first question. And it goes to Steve in North Riverside. All right, Steve, here we go. Tell me how these three things are connected. Wings, kings, penguins.
Wings are hockey teams.
They are hockey teams. Yes, indeed. There we go. Steve is on the board. That's how we play the Tri-Bond Challenge. Very nice start, Steve. All right, now we go to Steven. Steven, you've heard how the game works. This is up
yes.
to you. Hold on. A tent, a baseball, a horseshoe. A tent, a baseball, a horseshoe. Three seconds.
Tent, a baseball, and horseshoe.
Yes.
I don't know. Things that are lucky.
Oh.
No!
Oh, incorrect. That means, Steve, you get a chance to steal. You've got a tent, a baseball, a horseshoe.
Oh,
man.
Yeah.
Oops.
Crap.
All right, need a guess.
Don't have it. No idea.
Things that are pitched. I know, that was tough. That's all right. All right, so at the end of the first round, Steve has one, Steven has nothing. Dan, that was your, I took your job. I feel bad. I am sorry.
At the end of the first round, Steve has one, Steven has nothing.
I took your job. All right, we're back to Steve. Here we go. Peak, Crest, Colgate.
It will be toothpaste.
Correct. Very nice. All right, Steven, we're back to you. A tree, a bank, the military. A tree, a bank, the military.
Things that have branches.
Things that have branches. Very nice. It's funny, Dan, can you hear their brains just percolating? I hear the guys going back and forth. So Steven got that one. So we have ended another round. Dan, what's our score?
End of the second round. Steve 2, Steven 1.
Oh, this is very exciting. All right, we come back to Steve. All right, Steve, here we go. Softball, baseball, vampire. Softball, baseball, vampire.
Bats.
That is awesome. Very nice. All right, Steven, you can narrow the lead. Here we go. Milk, butter, cheese.
Milk, butter, and cheese.
From
Wisconsin.
Oh, while that might be true, that's not what we're looking for. That means Steve gets a chance to steal milk, butter, and cheese.
Dairy products.
Yes, dairy products. Oh, Steve with the steal. All right, where does that put us, Dan?
End of the third round, Steve 4, Steven 1.
Oh, my goodness. Steve, you know what that means. We come to you. You have 4. You get this one right, you win. If not, you give Steven a chance to steal and stay in the game. Steve, the pressure mounts on this Black Friday morning. Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Cuspid, incisor, canine.
Teeth.
Let's go to the board and see. Is it teeth?
Yes! Yes! Yes!
It is, in fact, teeth. Steve, that means you have 5, which means you are the big winner. Dan, you want to make it official?
Final score after 4 rounds. Yeah. Steve 5, Steven 1.
Very nice. Well, congratulations, Steve. Steven, maybe you were driving. You're focused on that, but congratulations on a well-played game. Let me tell you what you've won, Steve. This is very exciting. You have won a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. And we are going to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home to Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. So you get the desktop weather station and Lou Malnati's. And, Steven, because I am a generous man, a man who does not want to see anybody walk away empty-handed, we're going to send you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate as well.
Cool.
All right. Well, you're very welcome, gentlemen. Please hang on, and Dan will get all your information. Dan, I think we have time. We're going to play one more round on the other side of the break.
Let's do it.
What callers would you like?
Now, what did I say the first time? 2 and 5?
Something like that.
3 and 4.
All right. Caller 3 and caller 4 at 312-981-7200. Caller 3 and caller 4 at 312-981-7200. You will play the second round of the Overnight Arcade here on WGN. Do you think you can do better than Steve and Steven? I don't know. They did pretty well, but now it's your turn to try. We'll do it after this.
Game on!
Game on!
Time to play the game!
We had so much fun, we thought we would do it again. Yes, it's round 2 of the Overnight Arcade on 720 WGN. I'm your quizmaster, Brian Noonan. Tonight we are playing, or this morning we are playing the Tri-Bond Challenge. Who will be playing with us in round number 2? Let's find out as we meet our players. Mary is in Niles. Good morning, Mary.
Hey.
And what do you do for a living, Mary?
I'm retired.
Retired. What'd you used to do?
I'd rather not say.
All right. Wow, Dan, we've got a lot of people who are very secretive this morning. I like this. I like the area of mystery that our contestants are bringing to the game this morning. You know, a lot of people will tell you right out what they did. Mary, listen, I'm not going to pry. I like it. Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yes, I did.
All right. You were at liberty to answer that question?
Yes.
All right. Very nice. You know, I'm just teasing, Mary. We're happy to have you. Hold on. Let's see who you're going to play against. It is Mark. He is in Milwaukee. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Now, Mark, I hesitate to ask, but I ask all the players, what do you do for a living?
I run a small theater company in Milwaukee called Boulevard Theater.
Oh, Boulevard Theater. Very nice. Is it located downtown?
It's on the east side. We're currently running a production of Mothers and Sons through the 25th. We're on Facebook and MilwaukeeBoulevardTheater.com.
All right, listen, get the plug up, Milwaukee.
I love the stealth plug.
I do too. I like it. He was very, you know, whereas Mary played everything close to the vest, Mark brings it right out in the open. MilwaukeeBoulevardTheater.com. Was that correct?
I think that's correct.
All right, listen. All right, well, Mark, Mary, here's what we're doing. We are playing the Tribe On Challenge. I am going to give you three things. You are going to tell me what those three things have in common. For instance, if I were to say Buster Brown's dog, Muhammad Ali, and full-cut underpants, you would say they're all boxers. Get it? So all of these three things have a bond. All right. Do you understand the rules, Mark and Mary? Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah.
Ready.
All right. Well, let me flip and see who goes first. And it is Mary. Mary gets the first one. Here we go, Mary. What do these three things have in common? Recipe, pedigree, gravy train. Recipe, pedigree, gravy train.
No idea.
Ooh, that means I have to do this. Yes. Contractually, I have to play the sound effect, and then I must say that, Mark, you get a chance to steal recipe, pedigree, gravy train.
Dog foods.
Dog foods.
Good job. Keep up the good work.
Yes, they are, in fact, dog food. Mark with the steal, taking an early lead, but don't worry, Mary, you'll have a chance to come back. All right, Mark, it is now your turn. Here we go. A fiancé, a baseball stadium, a deck of cards.
Things with diamonds.
Things with diamonds.
That is correct.
It is correct. We are we are impressed, Mark. Very good. Dan, that ends the first round. How are we looking?
At the end of one, it is Mark 2, Mary nothing.
Very nice. Mark 2, Mary nothing. But Mary, this is your chance to get on the board. Are you ready?
Ready.
All right. Don't panic. That's the key to the Tribon Challenge, not to panic. Free your mind, and as they say, the rest will follow. A rodeo, a circus, a McDonald's. A rodeo, a circus, a McDonald's.
Clowns.
They have clowns.
That is correct.
That is correct. Mary is on the board. Very nicely done, Mary. All right, we come back to Mark. I don't know if you know, Mark runs a small theater company, Dan, MilwaukeeBoulevardTheater.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, so we're running Mothers and Sons by Terrence McNally through the 25th.
Through the 25th. Very nice. All right, we come back to you, Mark. Epstein, Washington, Horseshack.
The students on a TV show, a Welcome Back Cutter.
Welcome Back. Yes, very nice. Mark is doing very well. All right, Dan, we finished another round. What are we looking at?
After the second stanza, Mark 3, Mary 1.
All right, Mary. We're back to you. You ready, Mary?
Yes, I am.
All right, Mary, here you go. Oh, this one. Mary, this is, I'm throwing you a nice slow pitch. George, Paul, Ringo.
Beatles.
Yes, there you go. All right. Oh, now Mary is narrowing the gap, but we come back to Mark. All right, Mark, here we go. Kentucky Fried Chicken. Corn, the U.S. Army.
Things with kernels.
Things with kernels.
Yes!
Yes, very good. Mark is doing very well, Dan, isn't he?
He is doing well to the tune of a 4-2 lead over Mary after three.
Wow, 4-2. That's that seems daunting, but Mary, this is your chance to jump back in and narrow the gap. Are you ready?
Blood. Ready.
Blood. Ink blot. Multiple choice. Blood. Ink blot. Multiple choice. Mary, I need an answer. Blood. No idea?
No idea.
Oh, all right. That means, Mark, you have four. This is your chance to steal. If you are correct, you will win the game. If not, you will get another question because it'll be your turn, and then perhaps you could win the game. A lot of options where, Mark, you could win the game and go back and brag to everybody at the Milwaukee Boulevard Theater Company running Mothers and Sons through the 25th. You'll be able to tell everybody that you were the big winner. Blood, ink blot, multiple choice.
Types of tests.
Types of tests for the win.
Nice. Nice.
Yes. Very good. Dan, make it official, please.
Your final score after four rounds, it is Mark 5, Mary Deuce.
Mark 5, Mary 2. That means, Mark, you are the big winner. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. Well played, Mary. Mark, here's what you've won from our halfway decent prize closet. You get the desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. The 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. We're also going to send you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Or, being in Milwaukee, you can order online at loumelnatis.com. So congratulations, Mark, for winning the big game this morning. Mary, I don't want you to go away feeling sad, because that's not the kind of man I am. So I'm going to send you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate as well.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me try.
Oh, you are very welcome. Thank you for playing the game, Mary. And, Mark, one more time, what's the website for the theater company? You know we are patrons of the arts here.
I appreciate that. I think it's MilwaukeeBoulevard.com. We just changed it, and it's Mothers and Sons by Terrence McNally at the Plymouth Church through 11/25.
Very nice. Well, good luck with the theater company. Good luck with the production, and congratulations again on winning the big game. Hang on. Dan is going to get all your information. So there you go. That's it. Boy, oh boy, that round went pretty fast. Pretty fast. We didn't spend a lot of time hooping it up. We had some great contestants. I enjoy, that's part of the fun, when I fill in for Nick for a week on Friday mornings, we bring back the Overnight Arcade. It's something that, if you're new, we used to do, when I did weekend overnights, we used to do every Sunday morning at 2, and we always had a lot of fun with it, so we are very happy to be able to bring it back. Hope you enjoyed it. The news is coming up in just a couple minutes. Where? Well, you know where, right here on 720 WGN. Thanks, Don. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN. In for Nick DiGilio. Nick will be back on Monday. We are here until 5 o'clock. And then I have to check. I think the opening bell is on tonight. If not, Patty Vasquez is in for Steve Cochran. I know that for sure. So we will see what happens. Hopefully you had a nice Thanksgiving, whether it was with friends or family or even by yourself. Some people choose to spend the holidays by themselves. Some people, unfortunately, are by themselves for other reasons. Whatever it was, I hope that you had at least some sort of peace today and enjoyed yourself a little bit. Now it is Black Friday. We're going to talk a lot about Black Friday after 3 o'clock. So if you are out and about, we want to hear why you are out and about. I will give you ways that these stores are trying to trick you, and we'll talk a lot of Black Friday. But right now, we're going to focus a little bit. Dan is heating up the stuffing. Don, are you a traditionalist when it comes to your Thanksgiving bill of fare? You said you were at your mom's today. Does she go pretty straight up, with the basics?
She does, yeah. She's always got mashed potatoes and stuffing. She does two different kinds of stuffing. One of them kind of has, like, the dry bits in between and, like, some, I think it's crunchy, like, bits of, I guess it'd be celery.
Okay.
Which I usually prefer. And then there's just, like, a total, you know, like a more moist version, I guess. And then this time, for the first time, my stepbrother brought a deep-fried turkey over.
Ooh, how was that?
It was good. It was crispy. It wasn't too, he was worried that it was going to be too dry and stringy, but it wasn't. It ended up being nice.
And going back, I've never deep fried a turkey, because I haven't seen them yet, but tomorrow we'll be inundated with news coverage of people who set their houses on fire, or tragic stories of people in the burn unit because they didn't follow the directions correctly. And So I'm always terrified about doing that. I know people who've done it, and like your brother-in-law's, they said it turns out really good, but I'm, nah, I'll, I'll eat it if somebody else cooks it, but I'm not going to be out on the driveway with a giant boiling vat of oil.
No, me neither.
You know.
Interesting fun fact too. He said that the oil actually cost more than like the deep fryer and the turkey put together.
Really?
Like, I guess the oil's the most expensive part of the whole process.
Wow. And you can only use it once, right?
Yeah, exactly. You always have to keep using more because they sell it in, you know, smaller containers, and that's
sure
how they
do. That's how they get you.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Thanksgiving.
That's right.
So back to your mom's stuffing. Is one in the bird, or does she do both of them outside the bird?
Both of them are outside the bird. We actually, both at my mom's and then at my grandma's on my dad's side, neither of them do the stuffing inside the bird.
Okay.
So I don't think I've ever actually tried that.
It's good. That's how, growing up, that's how we always had it. That's how I always did it until this year. My brother always hosted Thanksgiving. This year he was not around, but with my daughter coming home, she was very upset that we were going to be out and not have any leftovers.
Oh, yeah.
So I cooked a turkey breast, and I made some the cornbread stuffing that my brother does, the dressing.
Nice.
I guess, and things. Last night on the show, we were talking about... Oh, here we go. We were talking about dressing and stuffing and obviously Thanksgiving type of food. And I mentioned that I had heard people talk about White Castle stuffing. Have you ever heard about this, Don?
I have not.
It's stuffing, dressing made out of White Castles. And I said, just offhandedly, oh, I've never known anybody that actually did this. And what did you say, Dan?
It has been the go-to in my family for the last few years, maybe almost a decade at this point.
So your uncle does all the cooking.
Right.
And he did it this year. Now, the big question yesterday was pickles or no pickles. We found out no pickles are involved.
Nope.
But this year you said he changed it up?
I don't know if he's been doing it the whole time or if he just did it this year, but he did change it up, and he cut it.
Okay.
So it's not pure...
I like that you make your uncle's dressing sound like some sort of cocaine deal.
This is how he described it.
Did he step on it?
That was the analogy.
What's the street value of this stuffing?
He literally said he literally said he stepped on it. That's how he described it to me.
That's great.
How much time has your uncle done?
None yet.
No? Okay. So did you ask him inquisitive questions?
I didn't press him enough because I...
you didn't really want to know, did you?
Sometimes it's better not to look behind the curtain.
It ruins. It's never good to see the sausage or the stuffing get made.
Nope.
So
leave the illusion.
He used his original White Castle stuffing, and then he cut it in half with traditional stuffing.
Yeah, ingredients.
Well, I am trying it for the first time, and I got to tell you, one, it's phenomenal. You really taste the White Castle.
You get the White Castle
flavor. Oh, yeah, you definitely get. If you like the White Castle flavor, This is you definitely have that White Castle feel. As I'm chewing on the thing, what was your question, Don?
Do you get this at White Castle, or do they sell it like at grocery stores?
Well, you have to make it.
Yeah, you buy the White Castle burgers and make it yourself.
Whoa. Oh, it's White Castle burger. I was envisioning that like White Castle had a secret stuffing menu something.
So what you do is and I only know this, I'm not an expert, but this is from what we learned last night. You get like 10 or 12 White Castles either from the restaurant, or you get them at the freezer section. Once they're cooked, you tear them apart, and then you add celery, a little celery. You add some sage and some thyme, and I forget, there was some chicken broth involved, something like that. And you bake it just like you would any other dressing.
Wow.
And it is, it's really good. I'm going to have to, but I said, and I will back this up, because I know my daughter loves White Castles, I love White Castles, my wife... for some reason, and yet we're still married after 26 years, does not like White Castles. So I would try this. I'm going to try a small batch of this either at Christmas time, or I don't want to wait till next Thanksgiving.
No.
I don't have this kind of time. I might make it on a random Thursday.
Now is the time.
Yes. Seize the Carpe White Castle. That's what we must do. We must seize the White Castle.
Carpe Sliders.
This is really good. Tell your uncle kudos from me.
Will do. I'm glad it went over on the
air. Yes. Oh, man, this is delicious. Delicious. Because, again, if you don't like White Castles, it's not going to be for you.
Brian, this sounds like an opportunity to sneak some White Castle stuffing onto the table. And if your wife admits that she likes it, then you get to reveal that. Be like, boom, you do like White Castle.
That's right. It's one of those things where you have to cook it when nobody's around so you can take the boxes out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just put it out there. And you go, oh, I've tried a couple different kind of dressings this year.
Yep.
Here's the cornbread that, see, my wife doesn't, she likes the cornbread. This is my brother's recipe.
Yeah, definitely. But, and I like cornbread generally, yeah. So this is jiving with me. What kind of sausage?
It's just Jimmy Dean, like the okay. bulk sausage. You cook it up first. And but she wants me to go back to making the my traditional stuffing, which has the consistency of your uncle's White Castle stuffing, where it's, you know, you dry out the bread and then you squish it up with the celery, onion,
right,
and all that, and you cook it. When you cook it in the bird, it comes out nice and moist like this, and that's kind of what she was like. Well, I like this, but I know you made it for Molly. It'll get eaten. It'll all be gone. So yeah, this one, he started making it when he started hosting Thanksgiving. He wanted to do something different. He didn't, I don't know, because the running thing at our house, and I can talk about this now because my aunt is gone, rest her soul. We used to go to my aunt's house for Thanksgiving for a long time, and she was a wonderful woman and a good cook, except for her stuffing. It was god-awful.
Oh, man.
And my four brothers and I, and my dad, her brother, were not always the most diplomatic when it came to this. So every year, on the ride over to my Auntie Kay's house, my mom would say, and don't say a word about the dressing. You know it's going to be green. It's because she used too much sage, so the dressing always looked green.
Oh,
it tasted okay, but it looked horrible.
Yeah.
It looked like something out of a dog food can.
And the sight of it is definitely part of the appeal. The whole Thanksgiving like meal, yes. looking at it on the table, like that is definitely a part of the joy of it. So, looking at some, you know, green
yeah,
eggs and
it
ham,
was.
So
oh upsetting. Man, it did not look good, and it was. And again, if you closed your eyes and just tasted it, it tasted fine.
Mm.
But oh man, so dressing, because my mom used my grandma's recipe, the most basic recipe, which is what I learned to do, and it was always really good. And so I think my brother didn't want to risk being the new house where people went, oh, man, don't say anything about the dressing before we get there. So he figured he'd just reinvent and make it his own Thanksgiving, which he did, and it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But that's where the cornbread stuffing came from, and I had never had it. And over the last 3 years, I found myself, like the week before, you know how you can think about a food and that taste, and its taste comes into your mouth?
Gets into the back of your head a little bit, yeah.
That's how it was with this cornbread stuffing. So what Molly was like, can you make that for me? I was like, oh, come on. You know, big martyr. Oh, it's going to be, oh, yeah. But secretly, I was like, ooh, that's a good idea. Yeah, now we'll have some of that at home. That's going to be fantastic.
And it's definitely working for me.
Oh, well, I'm glad you like it. Yeah, it's easy. It's one of those, you know, the cornbread. I know some people, the purists among us will buy the make their own cornbread. I just bought this already made, the cornbread at Mariano's. And then you cook up the sausage and you do the celery and onions. You saute them, put those in with some of the sausage, then the other half of the onions and the celery you saute with some sage and some thyme and salt and pepper. And you dry out the cornbread in the oven. I did that the day before. And then you make this egg half and half and chicken broth mixture, and you let that soak into the bread for, you know, a little while. Put all the sausage and everything together, and then put it all in the refrigerator for about 4 hours to let the flavors blend, and then you just cook it up for about 40 minutes. Bang. There you go.
Nice.
This is, man, I can't get enough of this White Castle stuff. Your uncle's my new hero. It's really good. Somebody said they tried it. They tried it yesterday for the first time. It is delicious, and everyone liked it. There you go. Tried a new topping on my turkey. Uncooked bacon layered on top. Whoa. Randy said the grease kept the meat moist, and it tasted great.
Yeah, I've never had that. I've got good reviews on it, though.
With putting bacon on the turkey?
Yeah.
Have you done that, Don?
I had a girlfriend whose family used to do that, and I've always liked it since. My family doesn't do it, but you can choose to eat the bacon afterwards, and that's kind of nice. But if you don't do that, like the whole turkey kind of absorbs the grease, and it's just, it's got a nice texture to it after that.
Wow, it sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, that's why I like that. You know, everybody's got their thing. This is how we live. Thankfully, I don't know why we brought this up, but thank goodness, because now I got to figure out a time, Dan. Maybe we create a holiday between now and Christmas.
Yeah,
and just you know,
stuffing day.
Stuffing day. Yeah, that's when you're packing and you're filling the stockings. It's stuffing day, and you just have stuffing.
Yeah, they have Boxing Day in Britain, you know?
Yeah, we can have Stuffing Day in America.
Why not?
And just everybody just makes stuffing, because this has meat in it. Mine has meat in it, so you're getting the protein in there. Sure, you got about a truckload of carbs.
Oh, well.
That's with a TR, just in case people are not listening clearly.
Yikes. Yeah.
The 608 says, don't be scared of frying a turkey. Too late. Peanut oil is expensive, but if you keep it under 375 degrees and filter it and store it in a cool place, you can reuse it multiple times.
Mm.
Measure how much oil you really need in the pot first. You're fine, but do not do it in the bathtub. All right. Well, there's
what?
I don't know. Somebody's going to try to. Are they talking about filtering the oil in the bathtub?
Deep frying the turkey in the bathtub?
Who's got a bathtub you can heat up? First of all.
I don't know, man, but that sounds dangerous.
Yeah, that does sound dangerous. All right. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. We'll talk a little bit more Thanksgiving and then move into Black Friday. We'll do all of that after this. It's WGN. All right, we had a text right before the news about talking about the oil for the deep frying the turkey, and said don't do it in the bathtub, and we had no idea what that meant. But Carrie is the person who sent that text and joins us now. Hello, Carrie.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Happy day after Thanksgiving.
Happy day after Thanksgiving. So what do you mean don't do it in the bathtub?
So what I was getting at was the reason I've been doing this for about 20 years before it really got popular in the North, because I had friends that live in New Orleans and Texas. I have friends that live in New Orleans and Texas.
Okay.
They've been doing this down there for a long, long time. So I got into it a little bit earlier before it got popular.
Yeah.
And it got a huge bad rap because people did just bad things, like, it's raining outside, I'm going to do it inside. Oh, what's a good place inside where if some oil spills? The bathtub. Well, what happens if something goes wrong? Your bathroom burns down. And the other thing I think I put in my text is, there's only a couple of things. Do it outside, away from anybody. Keep the kids and the dogs away from it. You know, keep away in a nice place. Not inside, not even your garage. Not inside your garage. Do it on your patio, away from anything flammable. And the other two big things people are doing wrong is, The turkey has to be completely thawed, because A, it cooks better, and B, you don't want this big block of ice going into boiling oil.
Right.
And the other thing the big thing they were doing wrong, well, part A and B, was, hey, let's just fill the pot up to the top, not realizing that when you put a 13, 14-pound turkey in that pot, all the oil is going to fall over, hit the burner, and light on fire.
Oh, jeez.
So what you have to do is measure the oil first. So you take the turkey, you can even do it frozen in the plastic, put it in, measure it with water, how much water does it take to cover that, then mark a little line on the outside, and that's how much oil you start with.
Ah.
And then you know that it won't overflow. And then the other thing is you gotta put it in the oil really, really slow.
Okay.
Just dump it in. It boils like crazy. It's a really impressive thing to see. But if you just drop the whole thing in, it'll splash over everywhere, and then it could go into the burn and catch on fire. But if you just do those few things, everything's cool, and you can reuse the oil, just filter it and put it back in the container it came in. But yeah, people were, the big problem at the beginning was people were like, I can just do this inside, it's kind of cold out today.
No.
That's what I meant by the bathtub.
Well,
you can filter the cold oil in the bathtub. That's actually not a bad idea, because if you spill some, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, I don't know. I have my little fry daddy inside. I can't make it some fries on the counter. I can't do a whole turkey in there.
No, just jam the whole thing there, and then mayhem occurs. Exactly.
So I thought I should clarify
that, because no.
Yeah, no, we don't want to do that.
But really, seriously, people, that's why it really got a bad rap in the beginning. Because people were doing some really, really stupid things. And even, I listened last, you had the Butterball lady on last night,
yes,
right?
Yes, yeah.
She actually said, yeah, deep frying's okay now. There's good ways to do it now. And just, read the manual, as they say.
How long does it take to fry a turkey?
Oh, it takes about, with a turkey, it takes almost no time. I believe it's, as opposed to in the oven, like a 10-pounder, it'll take you about half an hour, 40 minutes.
Oh,
it's about four. It's incredibly fast, and it's not greasy. That's a myth. If you just and you gotta have it, you gotta have a thermometer. But when you buy the kit at your Farm and Fleet or Walmart, wherever you buy it comes with a thermometer. Use it. Make sure the oil's what temperature they say. And then if you do it that way, the skin gets nice and crispy, and it's not at all greasy or like I think one of your callers said or texters. It's not stringy or anything. Just read the book.
Right.
You know, for like 5 minutes, and you're good to go.
Well, Kerry,
don't be afraid of it.
I appreciate.
Give it a shot. That's
I will
awesome.
Give it. I will give it a shot. I will overcome my fear and see what I can do. Thank you for all the information. Enjoy your black.
But don't
Friday.
Do it in the bathtub.
No, I'm not in the bathtub. Definitely not. Thanks, Kerry.
Okay.
Take
thanks,
care.
Ryan,
Lake Geneva Dan has an idea for what we could do with the stuffing. Hey, Lake Geneva Dan.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning,
Brian. We flash freeze the leftovers and get it back out for the Super Bowl. We call it Thanksgiving Part 2.
I like it.
There's your excuse to make your stuffing.
Yeah, I like it.
And
I like the idea.
Only way to cook a turkey's on a Weber grill.
Oh, see, now we're gonna get people throw down the gauntlet. Do we grill? Do we smoke? Do we roast? Do we fry? I'm not even going to count the people who are talking about microwaving turkeys. I'm not giving them any credence.
Yep. Thanksgiving Part 2, Super Bowl.
I like
bye.
It. Thanks, Dan. Bye. Yeah, that's it. We do, you know. But again, now I've got it. It doesn't seem hard either. Doesn't seem like. Did your uncle cook that in the bird or in a dish?
What the?
Dan Long,
gotcha.
Sorry, Dan.
This year was in a dish.
In a dish. All right, Don. So, Don, see, your brother-in-law didn't have to worry about it being stringy. If you fry it right, there's no stringiness.
Yeah, exactly.
And you said it was not stringy.
It was not. I will communicate that with him anyway, though, just because he's probably going to do the same thing again next year.
Well, you got to try it. I would imagine once you try it and it's successful, you're hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Like just about anything.
Yeah. And the skin's, like I said, it's nice and crispy, so it's just kind of a different texture on the turkey. It's cool.
All sounds good. Well, sounds good. Now I want more turkey. Yeah, we went to a place today I couldn't believe how many people were there. It was a Thanksgiving buffet, and the food, both my brother who was there and myself, we were shocked by how good the food was. It was, you know, they had the traditional turkey and all that stuff, and that was good, and their dressing was really good. And I was surprised because a lot of times you're like, it was good and everything else. And my nieces were fascinated because there was a chocolate fountain on the dessert table. And my niece, who was in kindergarten, we walked over to see the dessert. They had to see the dessert table before they had any real food. So we walked over to see there, and she went to put her hand right in the chocolate fountain.
Whoa.
Like she was just going to, and I can't blame her because it was just cascading down molten chocolate. And I thought, well, what if I came over with a coffee cup and
it's
just
appealing.
Filled it up?
It's appealing to do that.
And my other niece, who's in second grade, said she wanted to just dunk her whole body in it.
Yep.
You know what I want to dunk in that chocolate? My whole body.
It's some Willy Wonka stuff right there.
Oh, man, you go all Augustus Gloomp.
Yeah.
It would have been really crazy. Trying hard to wake us up. Keep things motivated. It is Brian Noonan in for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're here until 5 o'clock. Then it's the opening bell with Mark Carmen. Carmen is a jack of all trades. I am going to be listening with eager anticipation. Now, we all know Mark Carmen is a fine sports commentator here on WGN. He's a host of The Beat. He's on with Hamp, OB, and Kaz. He's hosted regular shows before. I didn't know he had a lot of business acumen.
Yeah, I'm interested in this pairing between show and talent.
Yes,
I'm sure he could pull it off. But.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah. I mean, it's an hour. He'll talk about Black Friday. He'll probably talk about some trends for Black Friday, which is, you know. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to hear.
I bet there's going to be a lot of overlap, you know, between sport, you know, contact that there is in sports and the contact in the aisles of those stores.
Yes.
Black Friday shoppers.
Could be that. The sport of shopping. So we'll see. We'll see. And what we don't know is right now Carmen is at home checking out the overseas markets, and he's got, you know, he's got like one of those green visors on, and he's doing all sorts of calculations.
Yeah.
He's ready to go.
He's already made 6 trades today, I'm sure.
We don't know. We don't know. Carmen's like some crazed day trader who's, I don't know. Somebody texting in, am I on on Sunday from 3 to 7 this week? That is an interesting question. At this point, I don't know. The easy answer would be, sure, we've planned it, and I've booked guests. We've got another edition of At the Breweries. We have a live music performance by the Mudflaps. A lot is scheduled to take place. However, as you heard Don report, and you heard earlier here in the day, Northwestern is playing in a basketball tournament on the West Coast. Which tournament is it, Dan? Is it the Wood Tournament? Is that what I heard?
The Wooden Legacy Classic.
The Wooden Legacy Classic.
Named for legendary John Wooden. Coach John Wooden.
Yes, all right. I was like, wait a minute. The Wood, what is the Wooden Legacy? John Wooden. The John Wooden. Why are, I guess if people know basketball, you don't have to say John Wooden. All right, so they're there. So there's a, now they play tomorrow. The Wildcats play, I'm sorry, later today at 3:15 or so.
Pregame 3:15, tip off 3:30.
Okay, so the tip off's at 3:30. And that's because they lost yesterday.
Yep.
So we don't know, depending on what the Wildcats do later today, there are four scenarios for their game on Sunday. I don't know what those scenarios are. They could play any time from noon until 9 p.m. So far, that's the word that we got. So every show, every Sunday show is on standby. There's a good chance we'll be on all or part of the show, or there's a chance that whatever happens at the Wooden Classic, we won't be on at all. So standby. Hang on. Thank you for asking, Texter. But I don't know what is right now. But as I said, we've got things planned. Cody and I are ready. We're always ready to do a show. All right, so it's Black Friday. I don't know if you are out and about. I want to hear from you. 312-981-7200, because I am fascinated by what draws people out of their cozy homes in the wee hours of the morning to go and try to get a doorbuster on a toaster. I'd love to hear what you're trying to get, because, again, I don't judge, because as I mentioned earlier, my wife and daughter are about an hour and 50 minutes away from leaving the house to be at some store that opens at 6. So people are out. I'm wondering, though, if, and Don, you had a story in the news where somebody said, you know, 10 years ago, you have to get up and you're out battling and da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because the stores open and offer their Black Friday deals so much earlier, there's in the last decade, online shopping has escalated exponentially. I'm wondering if the scene is as crazy. It can't be as crazy as it used to be.
Well, that's interesting. I do actually, on this traffic screen here, the company that provides it, they do on Black Friday, they do a parking lot percentage.
Yes.
Full. And right now at Woodfield Mall, as of about 20 minutes ago, the parking lot is 80% full.
Really?
At Woodfield Mall.
All right, if you're at Woodfield, what are you doing? What are you trying to get? Please, 312-981-7200, the phone or the text. If you're driving to Woodfield, 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's car dealers just renting out this parking lot just to park their...
to display.
Well, yeah, and to park their inventory?
Possibly.
Probably not.
Yeah. There is... Andrea mentioned the other night, Andrea Darles, she said that...
I'm familiar.
What is it? She said Black Friday specifically is best for things like laptops, clothing, and game consoles. Those are like the best deals you can get for Black. And then Cyber Monday is more for like, you know, other electronics and I think food and stuff.
Well, funny you should mention that, Don, because I have here a list of things that you should avoid on Black Friday. Purchases you should not make because they're not the deals that you would think they are. For example, they say televisions are not a good buy on Black Friday. Why? Because they are either lower quality items, they're last year's models, they're not quite the same. According to offers.com, they looked at Amazon reviews for televisions, and they said the best time to look for a quality TV is right after Christmas through February. You know why that is? Super Bowl. Everybody wants their big new TVs for the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're, I mean, they, according to this, if you're looking for, you know, a TV for your dorm room or something like that, it's okay. But if you're looking for a higher quality set, Black Friday may not be the time to do it. Because, you know, maybe you're going with one of the name brands, but it's a lower end model that they've marked way down. You go, oh my gosh, I'm getting a, you know, 64-inch TV for $38. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and after you watch two episodes on Netflix, yep. TV's done.
It's a plasma.
Yep. Plasma. Do they even have plasma TVs anymore?
I'm sure somebody does. Oh. You know?
Well, I have an LCD TV, which I know they don't do anymore.
That's right.
Now, no, it's the DLP. Sorry, the DLP.
Oh, DLPs, okay.
Yeah, the digital light, so it's bouncing off mirrors. It's a giant bulb bouncing off mirrors. But I got that, when were the Bears last in the Super Bowl? 2005?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's when I bought
the
this.
06 Super Bowl, was that?
Yeah. It was 06, the 05 season, the 06 Super Bowl.
06 Super Bowl. So I got my TV in 06, right before the Super Bowl, because we wanted a big TV, and that was, you know. So it's still holding on. I've had to replace the battery twice.
Sorry, the 06 season, the 07, the Super Bowl was in 07.
Super Bowl was in 07. Boy, you would have gotten kicked right off of all the sports broadcasts. Everybody, right now, everybody's ears, all the sports department, the whole thing, everybody's ears perked up. What did Dan Long just say? Oh, my God.
Right.
They were formulating hot takes against you. And you know how that goes. The hot takes in the sports department.
Let me extinguish those hot takes.
Please.
By correcting myself.
Throw a blanket over those hot takes. Roll around on the ground. Don't take those hot takes and Richard Pryor them up and down the hall. You gotta squash that right now.
I tried to block out everything from that game but the Devin Hester returning the opening kick.
Oh, sure. The first play, you're like, woohoo, here we go. Oh, no, this is going to be a long 3 hours. But anyway, so don't buy your TVs. Wait. Wait till after Christmas. You're going to be, oh, man. We once again have driven people to eat at odd hours. Been listening to the food talk and got so hungry, I'm going to the kitchen to make a turkey sandwich. Thanks. You're welcome, 630.
Gotta do it.
Yep. They say the doorbusters, that's what people get sucked into. Doorbusters, again, avoid that deal. They are often lower quality items, again, that sound too good to be true because they are. Don't be fooled by companies offering these kind of deals. Do your research and see if those products are really worth the money. So, because that's what's plastered everywhere, the doorbuster. Oh, doorbuster deal. I got to bust the door. And are people really busting the doors anymore? Again, I don't think. Tomorrow, now, you know, later today, we will see on the television news, somewhere in America right now, there is a riot happening at a Walmart with a lot of misshapen people trying to get in to buy an Instapot for $6, and they are battling each other. But this year, the stores are making it easier. We'll talk about more of these things to avoid and what's different at the mall this year on Black Friday. We'll talk about all of that and so much more, and we'll make sure that Dan's the hot takes against Dan are extinguished fully on WGN. We're talking all things Black Friday on WGN, and I was asking what people are out running around for if you're out today, because Don said he's seeing reports. The parking lot at Woodfield is 80% full, so people are out and about. What are you doing? Carol wants to jump on. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Brian. You make me laugh. I just love when you're on the radio.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So have you been shopping?
Macy's. Yeah. Wanted to get to Macy's. They opened at 5 p.m. yesterday. Got there about half hour, 40 minutes early. Got a slot, or a parking spot, about five down from the door.
Nice.
So I sat there and waited till 5 o'clock. I wasn't going to wait in the cold. When I started seeing people go in, I went in and got to the lower level. They had deals on sheet sets, and I wanted to get a couple for a wedding present for a wedding I'm going to next year. 950 thread count, $29.99 per set.
What did
usually
they start out at?
$200.
$200? They were down to $29.99?
Yes.
Did they have a lot of them, or were there like six sets and they sucked everybody in?
Three different like countertops that had not a lot on each, but the colors I was looking for I was able to get. And then they were very organized. They had a section not too far away from where I picked up these sheets where it was checkout. So I had a little bit of a wait there, but not long. They were working four registers, like back to back. So it moved pretty quickly. I was out and back in my car at almost an hour after I had parked to get in there. I was in and out, boom, done.
Wow. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Now,
no,
was it packed?
Excellent.
Was it packed in there? Because you couldn't
yes.
have been the only
person.
Oh, my
person. God. Just trying to get through, after I got in the door, through and then to the downstairs where they have all the linens, people were just, I was like, oh, my goodness. Just mobs of people.
Now, are you done, Carol, or was this your one outing for Black Friday, or are you going back out later today?
I am going back out this morning.
Okay.
I'll be getting up and getting dressed to go out to Menards, which is just very near where I live.
Okay.
To pick up a couple of things for some Star Tree kids that I participate that
yeah.
through my church for that.
Very
so
nice.
They have things that would work for the kids. So
okay.
then I should be done.
Well, good luck. I don't envy you battling those crowds. It is not. That's why I try to avoid it at all costs, but I'm glad it worked out well for you. I like that also you're planning ahead, a year ahead, with wedding gifts.
Well, this is my godson and his fiance, who we love.
Very nice.
And they had just gotten a king-size bed, but I'm guessing they're not going to have really nice sheets
right.
at the beginning.
But now they will, thanks to Aunt Carol.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well, enjoy the rest of your day, Carol. Thanks for checking in. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's very nice. Going out to early. I couldn't do it. And it's funny. We were the place that we had dinner on Thanksgiving was right next to a Macy's. And when we walked in at about 2:30, you knew it was closed. And it still hadn't. We left before 5, so it wasn't open. But there's no chance. There's nothing that I need to be out at that hour. No chance. You're not doing it. I know you're not doing Black Friday.
No.
I don't blame you.
I went out of curiosity by myself a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And I just kind of wandered around. I was like, I don't need it. I went to an electronics store. I was like, I don't really need a fridge or anything, so I don't know what I'm doing here.
I don't know what I'm doing here. There was a line. When I left, what time did I leave to come here? About 9:45. Last night I left to come to work, and the Best Buy right near me was packed. And again, it's like, holy cow, I get it, but it's just not for me. I only did it once, and I didn't go until it was like 5 o'clock Black Friday afternoon. So it wasn't, the craziness, and that was great because the sales were still going. The thing that I wanted was still there, but there was no, because everybody was asleep. They had been up since, 5 o'clock, 12 hours ago they were shopping.
Yeah, you're not brawling with people
no.
in the aisles.
It was. I wandered in. I was like, what's all the fuss about? This Black Friday shopping's a cinch. But I'm not out there now battling. Just woke up about to head out bow hunting for deer. That's like Black Friday for the deer, but in a whole different way. All right, some other things you need to avoid. The deals are not deals. Mattresses, they say mattresses go on sale all year, so don't bother with those on Black Friday. Current generation phones, Black Friday sales are not the time to get the best phones. You might get a gift card with the newest models, but that gift card isn't always money in the bank. You may have to, you'll have to spend it usually at the store where you get it, so be careful of phones on Black Friday. Fitness equipment, no. Here's when you buy fitness equipment, first of the year, when they're marking it down going, hey, you're going to go on a diet, right? This is the year you're going to get in shape. This is why you need this treadmill. Come on in. It's deeply discounted. Yeah, okay, I'll come in and get the deeply discounted treadmill. That's how they get you.
Popular holiday toys. Now, the other morning, we talked to somebody from Best Reviews, and they were saying some of the hottest toys are almost sold out. So I'm a little hesitant about this one. It says, if you have popular holiday toys on your list, consider waiting until 2 weeks before Christmas to purchase those items when they are notoriously cheaper than on Black Friday. But that's a gamble. Because if there's something you really want, Lego advent calendars. I remember those popped up. There's something they were really talking about. Or the hatchlings or fingerlings and stuff. If you wait till 2 weeks before Christmas, forget about it. You're on eBay or Craigslist or somewhere else trying to buy them from somebody who's cranking the price up. Don't buy winter apparel on Black Friday. Wait till the end of the season.
Don't buy jewelry on Black Friday. The deals aren't as good. The weeks following Valentine's Day and Mother's Day are the best time to buy jewelry. Stay away from furniture stores because, like mattress stores, they do sales all the time, and Black Friday is not the time. And if you're going to Sam's or Costco, one of these wholesale clubs, they don't have the loss leaders to drop their prices, so you're not going to get the same level of deals that you would if you go to a regular department store. So some of the things that might be a little different this year if you are going to the mall on Black Friday, I like this idea. Have you heard they're doing different checkout lines? Target and Walmart are trying to make it, they're going to have people checking you out all throughout the store. So like they'll have registers in the electronics department, in the toy department, and everywhere else. So you don't have to get your stuff at the back of the store, then go to the front and stand in an 8-hour line. They're going to have people all over the stores checking you out. I think that is a brilliant, brilliant idea.
So Walmart's abandoning their strategy of having one out of 30 checkout lanes open?
Well, what they may be doing is just have one mobile checker who wanders around. So it's like, where's Waldo? And you have to chase them around the store in hopes of finding the person who can run your credit card so you can get whatever it is you're getting.
Fun.
It's a good idea, but I think the I saw a picture of one of these mobile checkout workers online, and they like had a balloon tied to them, and it seemed kind of, demeaning.
Just give him a big horse head mask or something. You might as well.
You sit here on the high chair, the baby high chair, and have people come up to you like to check a balloon tied to them. Well, I get, is it more demeaning to have a balloon tied to you or to have them dress you in some sort of elaborate costume, like a cash register costume or one of those credit card slider costumes and have you wander about? Which is more demeaning?
That's a good question.
I think I would go with Dan. I think the balloon may be more demeaning.
Yeah, it's just the one kind of sad looking balloon.
Yeah,
following you around.
You can get into a mascot costume. Like if you're enthusiastic, like I think people are, it's less humiliating. But a balloon, there's really nothing you can do with that.
No, it's just tied to. Oh, that is horrifying. Well, all right. The other thing that you'll be seeing, you know, Toys R Us is closed, so everybody's cranking up their toy selection. Target, Walmart, Penny's, Kohl's, they are all carrying a wider selection of toys this year, both in-store and online. Amazon, for the first time, has released a print holiday toy catalog. Party City has opened pop-up Toy City stores. And Kroger has partnered with the people that owned Toys R Us, the hedge fund, and put Jeffrey's Toy Box sections in nearly 600 grocery stores. So you'll be able to find toys everywhere. You can also, a lot of stores are putting maps on their website. And did you, Carson's is reopening. Did you hear that? Just for this weekend in Evergreen Plaza, a company in Merrillville, CSC Generation, bought Bon-Ton's intellectual property. Bon-Ton was the parent company of Carson's. And so they are opening in Evergreen Park for the weekend. And then they're supposedly going to open in the former JCPenney store at Stratford Square in mid-February. So it'll be interesting to see because I'll tell you, I got a lot of good deals when Carson's was going out of business. I felt bad for a minute because you're like picking the carcass of a dead bird. But
listen, it's life, man.
Yeah, I'm a consumer. I bought stuff there when they were in business. So, Dan, do we got a break before the news? No, we don't. All right, good. Then I was perfect. Perfect timing then to talk right up to 3:30 and say, hey, it's 3:30. And after the news, I'm going to tell you how the stores are trying to trick you into spending more of your money. Oh, boy, it's devious. Devious. And again, if you are out Black Friday shopping, check in. Tell us about the crowds. Tell us what you're looking for. What dragged you out of the house at this ungodly hour? Thank you, Don. Brian Noonan in for Nick D on 720 WGN. Nick will be back Monday morning, so we are finishing up our week. It's been a lot of fun, Dan Long. Nice job. It's been good working with you.
It has, yeah, absolutely. Flown by.
It has,
considering the amount of radio we've done.
We have done quite a bit of radio. We've pumped out some content, as the kids like to say. And you can always, if you missed any of it, you can always go to WGNradio.com. Dan has posted all the podcasts. We had a really cool interview with Jonah Ray, the host of MST3K, The Gauntlet, that was on the other night. We talked about the hot toys for the holiday season earlier in the week. We've talked to the Bruseum. We had a lot of fun this week. A lot of fun. So glad you've been with us and looking forward to coming back. And we thank Nick for and Dan Chigrou for letting us sit in and keep their seats warm while they were gone enjoying. So, all right, Black Friday. We'll continue talking. You're going to go to the store. The stores are going to try to trick you. Why? Because they're devious and evil. And two, they want your money. That's just how it is. We were talking about right before the news about the differences in going to the malls, and we ran through some of those. Somebody texted in from the 815. The difference at our mall this year is Sears, Penney's, and Bergner's. The three major stores are all out of business and empty. Yeah, that the retail landscape, the brick-and-mortar landscape, has changed quite a bit this year.
Shifting big time.
Yeah, Sears is gone. You've got Carson's gone. Any of the Bon-Ton stores, you know, under the their umbrella, those are all gone.
Gap just announced, I think earlier this week, they're pursuing maybe aggressively closing a bunch of brick and mortar stores.
Really?
So I don't think it's going to happen before Christmas this year, but by next year, that'll look pretty different too.
Yeah, and in the last couple of years, Kmart has gone, as Sears has gone down. So listen, I know it sounds very old fashioned. I shop online, no doubt about it. I still like to go into a store and touch things and like things I'm going to buy. I don't just want to like lick my palm and rub it on the fixtures. I'm not doing that, but I like to hold up something and look at it. And, you know, I also like to try things on because one extra large doesn't run like another extra large.
Oh, yeah.
Everything runs different. And, you know, you go in, you can see how things are put together. I don't like to go to stores today. I won't go this weekend. And I will try to avoid all malls on weekends between now and the end of the holidays. I'll go middle of the week at night, you know, when I'll take the gamble that the stores are going to be a little less crowded. But, you know, I'll go in and we're getting some updates. And please update us, 312-981-7200. If you are out and about, we want to know what's happening, what mall you are at, how it looks. We heard Don reporting on the parking lots, but let me know if there's people, if you've had to tackle anybody, if any punches have been thrown while you're trying to get one of your deals. Old Orchard Mall, pretty busy. Surprisingly, the Edens Plaza as well. Northbrook Court is empty. All right, if you're thinking, go. Take off. Get to Northbrook Court. That, according to a texter from the 847. Traditionally, hi Brian, this is from the 807. Traditionally, our big shopping day in Canada for big sales is on Boxing Day. But since 85% of our population lives 100 miles or less from the States, we now have Black Friday sales everywhere to keep people shopping local. Love your show. Well, thank you very much. And always good to find out what people are doing with our neighbor to the north.
They have Boxing Day in Canada, too?
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure.
My goodness.
Canadians like a good fight as well as anybody else. Who doesn't? All right, so here's some of the ways that, as I've been saying, that the stores are trying to trick you into holiday shopping. The ambiance plays a huge role in persuading people to buy more and get into the holiday shopping spirit. So if you walk into any retailer, you're going to hear festive music. You're going to have the smell and all of that, a good smell. So here is the first one, the alluring scent of a store. Now, I don't fall victim to this because I don't know if you know this or not. I have no sense of smell, which is...
Not at all?
No, and I'm getting very... I never really paid much attention to it, but in the last few years, I'm starting to be bothered by it. And nobody knows why. You know, doctors have said, well, did you have a fever when you were a small child? I said, I don't remember when I was a small child. So I'll ask my mom, hey, did I have a fever? And she'll go, what is this, a Pink Floyd song? And I'll say, no. Did I have a high fever? Is that why I don't have a sense of smell? And she's like, I don't know. It just always has been a thing.
Yeah, but your taste is, like, unaffected? Like, you can still taste
it? Oh, yeah, I can taste stuff. But I'm sure I'm missing out on some subtleties. You know, I'm sure I'm missing out on some of the subtleties of everything, you know. But the good news is I've never smelled, gas.
Right.
Emanating from someone.
There's some
but on the flip side, I've never smelled cookies baking.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but this is how they're getting you at the stores. They're pumping scents in. We know scents in particular and types of music are seasonally effective or preferred. So they're saying some customers tend to purchase more premium products and brands when they're in a warm, scented environment with smells such as vanilla or cinnamon. Some, as opposed to stores that have cool-scented environments, such as peppermint and eucalyptus. And they did a study on this. There was one involved 154 customers in a glasses store, an optical store. So it was a high-end optical store. The researchers found that the customers in the warm scent environment made significantly more purchases of premium brand eyewear than those in the cool scent environment. And we know, I mean, that works. That's one of the things they tell you if you're trying to sell your house, too. Bake some bread, bake some cookies. So when you're having an open house and people come in, they go, oh, this place smells so homey.
Yeah, or at least spray one of those, you know, Glade scented sprays in it.
Yeah, so you get a nice smell. So the stores are doing that, too. If you walk in, you're like, uh-oh. This place smells like vanilla. I'm going to spend a lot of money. I got to get out of here. Just flee like you're on fire. Just run. Shopping to the Beat. And no, Dan, not the show that you produce on the weekends. Not that it's not a quality show, but listening to Carm and Harry or whoever's hosting the Beat that week talk about sports, that's not making people spend more money.
Damn.
It's making them stay in the car and listen to the radio. So it's having the opposite effect. The stores want people to not listen to the Beat and come in and spend money. But music, depending on what kind of music they're playing, it will trick you into spending more money. Music that has too fast of a beat moves people through the store too quickly. So you want something upbeat, but not too fast. Consumers are more likely to impulsively buy products in the presence of faster background music compared with background music that has a slower rhythm, but that's just for impulse buys. If you want people to linger and shop, you need something a little calmer, you know. But if you just want to, like, so if you're in a 7-Eleven or a dollar store, crank up the jams, some speed thrash death metal. People would be buying stuff like crazy. One, because their mind is tricked, and two, just to get away from that speed thrash death metal.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna, you know, they got to run. Another way they're trying to trick you is the power of grouping. Which is, you know, when they put everything together. So maybe you're going in to buy a sport coat. Well, then they, you know, on the display, there's the sport coat and there's the pants and the shirt and the tie and the pocket square and some shoes and a hat and a monocle and some spats. And you're like, I got to have it all.
Right. Want the whole outfit.
Yeah. Because why would you just buy the coat if you buy the whole look? Buy the garanimals. Get out there. And, you know, you don't want it. Then everybody's walking around looking like the mannequin at Macy's.
Mm-hmm.
That seems, no.
I know they do that with game consoles, too. They always try and bundle them up with different games, different accessories and stuff.
Do they bundle? Now, I don't know anything about gaming. So this is a question from a guy who's completely uninformed on that topic. When they bundle those together, do they put good games in the bundles? Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, yeah, they want you to buy the bundle, but it's games that nobody would buy if they were by themselves.
I think that used to be the case a lot, but lately, I mean, the last couple of years, the bundles are pretty solid. Like, there's one for Black Friday I know of, I've been hearing about from my friends. You can get a PlayStation 4 with the Spider-Man game, Marvel's Spider-Man, which came out in October, okay. And it's for like $200. So a PS4, which is, you know, a modern console with, what you know, possibly the game of the year, it's not a bad deal at all, yeah.
So, what PlayStation are we on? PlayStation 100?
4 is the most recent. Okay. They say, though, next year there's a game conference, E3, that happens in June where everybody, like, dishes their, you know, their projects for the upcoming year. And yeah. Sony announced they're going to do their own. So, people are speculating that there's probably a new console going to be announced next year.
And will that then render... Again, not knowing about the gaming systems, does a new console render all your old games moot?
No. The Xbox and PlayStation both have made a lot of effort to make games backwards compatible.
Oh, okay.
So they keep adding to those catalogs. Like every month, they'll announce some more games are now playable on your new systems.
And what makes one system better than another? Just the graphics?
At this point, I mean, the graphics are so comparable that, like, the only thing that really differentiates systems is exclusive games. Like, Sony has a lot more exclusive games. For instance, Spider-Man. You can't get that on the Xbox or the Nintendo Switch. Like, you can only play that on Sony.
Oh, okay.
So it's really just kind of about, you know, which games you'd be more into that is that sort of separates which console you want.
Ah, well, see, now that makes sense. Look at me getting educated.
I'm curious, George. Let's take a quick break. I'll tell you a couple more ways that the stores are trying to trick you. And there's so much more to come. We got a little over an hour. And then Mark Carman on the opening bell. We say that with admiration and incredulousness. Mark Carman on the opening bell at 5. Mm-hmm. Getting down. This kind of music would make me impulse buy, we've learned. This is the kind of thing the store is going to be pumping in. Pumping in the jams to make you spend that money. You got to spend that money. Another way they try to trick you. That's what we're talking about. And again, throughout the morning, if you are out, please check in. Let us know where you're at. Let us know how crowded things are. We want to know what the situation is as Black Friday commences or continues. Because Black Friday started like last Thursday, didn't it? It's been a week and a half of Black Friday.
Pretty much.
Based on my email inbox, Black Friday has been going on since the day after Halloween. Because every store, early Black Friday kicks off now. Don't wait till Black Friday. See our Black Friday preview. Shut up. I'm done. I get it. Scents and low-level music used in stores, I believe, are also used in casinos. That from Peter in Decatur. Thank you, Peter.
They also pump oxygen.
Is that true, or is that an urban legend?
No, I've read that casinos still do that. They pump oxygen into it so that you stay in there because you don't feel tired.
Well, and also if they didn't pump in some sort of fresh air, the BO coming out of people sitting at the slot machines after 18 hours.
And the cigarette smoke, at some of them, I mean.
There is nothing more, and I say this being married to a woman who presented this image not more than once. Walking up and seeing somebody who's been sitting at a slot machine for hours with their cigarette and their drink, and then, a glass with a couple cigarette butts in it because mm-hmm. the ashtray was full. And, oh, man, we were in Vegas once. I forget what we were there for. But there was a bunch of my brothers were there and some friends and my wife. And my wife doesn't gamble often, but when she finds she has a particular type of slot machine that she likes to play. And when she finds it, she'll hunker down.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular night, she had found one and she hunkered down and she was doing okay, I guess. She has an odd accounting system when she's gambling. She doesn't count how much she's lost. She just counts how much the machine pays out. So she'll have buckets of coins and I'll say, "Oh, is this your winnings?" "Well, no, not necessarily." I said, "Well, how much did you lose?" "I don't count that. I only count what I win." I said, "Well, isn't that interesting?" Yeah. "It doesn't." The casinos must love you,
right?
So good for you. But we all went out. We all went out carousing, and when we left her, she was at the slot machine. I came back after a couple hours. She was still at the same slot machine. "I'll be up in a couple minutes." "Okay." Well, my youngest brother, came back a few hours after that. And lo and behold, there was my lovely wife still at the same slot machine.
Wow.
And he walked in and he saw her. He's like, "Hey, what's going on?" She's like, "Oh, I'm just, I'm going to bed in a couple minutes." And this was maybe 6 in the morning. So she had slotted it up all night.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't want to say she's, a degenerate gambler, but, Jeez. So going back, that's why you got to pump oxygen into these casinos, because mm-hmm. just the BO cloud, there's a lot of people in there that look like Pigpen from Peanuts, just absolutely. Walking around with clouds coming off.
And their own dirty blankets just draped over them.
Horrible. Or the people who just, give up and come down in their pajamas, sit there in their muumuus at the penny slots.
Who cares?
Yeah, if you're playing the penny slots, first of all, you've given up. Let's be honest.
It's true.
My dad loved the penny slots. I'm like, why? What's the point?
And then what's your big win?
Yeah, I made 78 cents. Hey now, let's go to the buffet. You don't even have enough to get me a shrimp cocktail. I am sad. This is not how I wanted to spend our time in Vegas.
Right.
Watching you humiliate yourself. You've worked hard your whole life, and now you got a roll of pennies, and suddenly your got rocks. It is rolling in. Come on, Rockefeller. Let's hit it. I've got 50 cents burning a hole in my pocket. All right, good. I'll see you in about 4 hours.
Right. Perspective, I guess. Yeah.
They're good if you're trying to get the attention of the pit boss or the guys that are on the floor. They're like, "Oh, that guy's been sitting there for a while," and maybe hopefully they're in they have pit a phase where they're trying to sell like players cards or whatever. So you sign up for a players card, you just play a bunch of, you know, hope, and this is if you're lucky, just play your penny slots or video poker or something and then get a free buffet out of it or try to get something comped.
How long do you have to be at the penny slots before they toss you a buffet?
That's if you have 3 weeks to spare, yeah.
I've been playing this penny slot since late September, and I still haven't even gotten a free drink.
Right.
All right, well, listen. Again, I love people who do these things. So when I make fun of them, it's not, you know, I'm not casting judgment on everyone. I'm just pointing out that it seems silly to me. I'm not a gambler because I hate to lose. I'll play some blackjack. To me, slot machines are the most boring thing on the planet.
Yeah, and it's complete chance. You have literally no control.
And now you don't even have to pull the handle.
You just press the button.
At least back in the day, you got your bicep workout on one arm.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're just sitting there, you're punching a button. It's like a gerbil waiting to get food. You're pumping your quarter, your nickel, and you hit the button.
And all those slots, they look very much the same. Just a bunch of flashing lights.
Yeah.
And then, you know, this one's called like the, you know, Prince of Egypt, and this one's called the Tiger Eye, and they're all the same thing.
Yeah, there's the one my wife likes is, there's not a particular brand, but they have bonus. You got to have the bonus, Don. If you hit it and you get the bonus, then the payout is much bigger. And I'm like, okay, all right. Well, let me know.
Right.
But in her defense, and this has been, 3 years maybe since we went to see a show at the Horseshoe Casino, and then she wanted to play some slots. So I went and played blackjack, and I was out. I'd given myself a whopping $50. I was going to play with $50. 17 minutes later, I was done.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife, she's pumping money into this slot machine. I said, "How you doing?" She's like, "Get away from me!" I was like, "Why? I'm winning." She ended up winning like $400.
Wow.
I know. But every time I came by, she would lose. So she told me I had to go.
You're messing with the juju,
yeah,
man.
I went and I got a cigar and I sat at the bar, like, you know, just waiting. What are you waiting for? My girl's over there making me some money. And she wandered back in. How'd you do, baby? I made $400. All right, let's go. You can go home now. It was very weird, a very, very weird relationship at that point. I wasn't comfortable with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have to say, I'm not much of a gambler myself either. My family tends to like it. Like, my mom and stepdad love going to casinos. My grandma always does. Goes up to Pottawatomie in Milwaukee, like, once a month at least.
Nice.
But my dad took me to Vegas when I was 21, and the most dangerous thing for me was those video blackjack things, because they have them right at the bar. Sit at the bar, and you just put, like, $20 in, and every time your glass gets, you know, 3/4 empty, the bartender just fills it right up again. So you just sit there getting hammered, feeding your money into a machine. I definitely did the all night thing too. I didn't, you know, I was there like in the lobby until like 4 or 5 a.m.
Well, that's the thing. If they give you that's the smart casinos that just keep giving you the drinks. That's
exactly.
Oh, yeah, keep drinking. From the 630, can you give a shout out to all who are working in assisted living, taking care of the elderly and memory care? I work at a great place in Lombard. Many of us from servers, nurses, and caregivers are there. Consider yourself shouted out. Thank you for all the work you do. It is a very valuable job, and it is a job that requires a lot of compassion and heart, both things that I don't possess enough of to do the job that you do. So there you go, 630. Thank you for working and taking care of the people that you are taking care of. We appreciate that. All right, this will surprise you. Before we get out of here, snooty salespeople, they say if you're in a high-end store and the salespeople are snooty, people will sell more. So be careful of that. That's the opposite of what I thought it would be. And finally, another way that the stores try to trick you, the deceptive display. Products are displayed in a store to influence you. They may display differently priced versions of a product next to each other, a move called framing, to entice shoppers to spend more. It's where retailers put the two similar items that have different price points on display, and they try to subtly upsell you. All right. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And then on the other side of the news, we'll talk about your kids and screen time and so much more in the final hour of the big broadcast here on WGN. Good morning, Brian Noonan on 720 WGN for Nick D. Nick D will be back with you on Monday morning. We have had a wonderful week sharing the overnight hours with you, and hope you feel the same. We've been talking about Black Friday. We're going to move on, but we asked you to, and you can still listen if you're out and you're figuring out what's happening. Give us a call, as I'm starting to see the WGN Morning News is covering it. They're showing lines outside of places. People are smiling as they're standing in line. That is not going to be me. If I have to stand in line, I am not going to be smiling. And I like that. I don't know who had the who got the interview with the Disney princess down. That was quite a man. That was quite a Black Friday shopping story. Who was?
I know.
She was so cute. Was she saying she was so cute, or what she bought was so cute?
Let me see here. Hold on.
Just a couple things for one of the jobs that I work for. I'm a Disney princess for. It's super cute.
She's just like, it's super cute.
It's super cute to be a Disney princess.
I guess.
I don't know. Is that, you throw that, I guess she throws that out there to go, oh, you did seem like you could talk to birds. That was, you seemed
right.
Like you'd feel a pee if you laid down.
Yeah. It's her job qualifications.
Is that why you're shopping with seven short people? I don't, all right, very nice. Yes, she's. It's one of my jobs. I'm a Disney princess. You would think being a princess is a full-time job.
I know.
Like, but it sounds like she needs a side hustle.
What are the benefits for that?
I don't know. She's a Disney princess, and then what? Then I'm a Marvel villain. Oh, really? Yes. I play Cinderella during the day, and then at night I'm Dr. Octopus. Oh, okay. Well,
Jack of all trades.
That's good. Yeah, it's good to be multi-talented. You don't want to be pigeonholed. I don't want to. Listen, I'm much more than just a princess. I have a dark side.
Right.
I want to show, and I also want to direct. Oh, all right, good.
Cool.
Well, that's fantastic. Good for you. If you're out and about. Now, this person is not out, but Dan, I don't know if this will throw you off a little bit. Somebody says, hello, I'm at home. I'm in bed watching The Grinch muted while listening to you guys. I'll shop online sometime today. I don't know who that's from. Yeah,
it's quite a visual.
Yeah, I don't know if I should be flattered, disturbed, passive, nonplussed. I don't know. There's a lot of options for feelings on this one.
Watching The Grinch muted while listening to you, Brian. I don't know what that says.
Well, I am a mean one, Mr. Don. So I don't know if maybe that's it. Maybe my personality and The Grinch's meld enough where it's a nice twofer.
A little blend.
As you lay in bed.
Yeah.
I don't know who's laying in bed. Either way, I don't know. I don't know how to take it. I think I'm being catfished.
Possibly, yeah.
Could be.
It is that time.
Sure. What time? Is there a perfect time for catfishing, Don? Is
it, I was thinking of like...
Yes, 4:10 a.m., that's the best time to get catfished.
This is this five-minute window between 4:10 and 4:15 is the catfisher's paradise.
Well, sure. That's because they know people are a little groggy. Mm-hmm. They're going to let their guard down. They get a text from somebody, I'm in bed watching The Grinch. Hello.
Follow this link to see.
Yeah. Okay. Give me your credit card number. You've got it. Can I give you all my credit card numbers in case the first one doesn't work? Sure you can. That would be terrific. All right. If you have children or grandchildren, or if you are a child or a grandchild, you may. There's been a lot of debate over the last few years about how much screen time kids should be exposed to. Because they're saying that increased screen time can be connected to depression and anxiety and all and this and that and not doing well in school. And every day there's different studies that come out and tell you, don't let your kid be on in front of a screen if they're this age for this much time and this and that. And more stuff coming out today. I saw this and I watched this at school because in the school that I'm at, every kid has a device. So from the time you're in kindergarten, you get an iPad. And, they spend a lot of time during the day on their school apps, and then they take the iPad home, and I know a lot of these kids are using it at home. And then I ask kids, what'd you do over the weekend? When I see them on Monday, we just played video games. That's all? Did you go outside? You'd be amazed how many kids never go outside to play. And I know in certain neighborhoods, it's unsafe. Kids can't just run out and play like they can in other neighborhoods. I understand that. But even like to have somebody take them to the park, they stay inside. And because of that, because of where they're living and the you know, access or non-access to be able to go outside, a lot of these kids are spending a lot more time on their video screen. So for years, the American Academy of Pediatrics suggested a limit of 2 hours a day of TV for children and teens. But then, of course, we got phones and we got tablets and we got computers, and the guidelines needed an update. So last year, the Academy changed the recommendations, and they said no more than an hour of screen time for children ages 2 to 5. I'm really surprised that... Well, I guess maybe I'm thinking of giving kids iPads and stuff. But screen time, of course, includes television, too. But when kids are two, I'm trying to remember back. Dan, you're not far removed from being two. Were you in front of the TV a lot as a child?
Oh, I remember it crystal clear.
Sure, you're barely past it. You're a young man. I'm trying to remember. I was thinking about Molly, my daughter. You know, she would watch some TV. If I was doing something around the house, I'd turn on PBS. She'd watch, you know, Teletubbies or Mr. Rogers or Sesame Street, whatever. But I don't think she sat in front of it for more than an hour. You know, because you plop a 2-year-old in front of a TV for an hour, more than an hour, something's up. You're doing something insidious upstairs. Just go down and watch TV. Why? What are you doing? Why are you making those noises? Be quiet. Stay downstairs. Don't knock on the door. Daddy's busy. Really? Daddy, what are you? Shut up. So anyway, for older children and teenagers, no more than 1 hour screen time for children ages 2 to 5. For older children and teenagers, it cautions against too much screen time, but doesn't set a specific limit, which gives the impression that preschoolers are the only ones that need time limits, and that is not true. New research conducted challenges the idea that vague directives and loose guidelines are the best approach. 312-981-7200. I think limiting kids' screen time is very important. I think the more they're on there, the less they're connecting to the outside world. But I'm wondering how you handle it in your house. Have you put strict limits on your kids' screen time? We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll give you some more of this data and why it's so confusing, and why one day we're hearing one thing and one day we're hearing the next. We'll get to all of that and your thoughts. 312-981-7200. It's WGN. Hey, Bears fans, enter for your chance to win 2 spots on the all-inclusive Bears fan trip to Cancun at chicagotribune.com/monster giveaway, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune. All right, we have a clarification. You know, I'm never above a correction. If I were a newspaper, I'd be printing retractions every day. This is when seeing video actually helps, because I mentioned a news story that Don did about Black Friday, and it had a young lady talking about being a Disney princess. Well, we only heard the audio, so I assumed she was saying, because the way she said it on the audio, one of my side jobs, I'm a Disney princess. Well, according to one of the texters, she says, I believe she was showing the interviewer something she bought for her coworker that said, I'm a Disney princess on it. I still like my scenario better.
Yeah.
That she's, you know, she's working part-time as a Disney princess.
She's hustling.
Yeah, you got to get out there. She's an Uber driver, Disney princess, Marvel supervillain, you know, financial, and a barista.
Yeah, financial consultant.
Yeah, and a day trader. She's actually she's going to be Mark Carmen's guest on the opening bell. Carmen will be doing the opening bell and talking to Disney princesses about the economics of tiaras. It's going to be very exciting. We will all be listening. Oh, I'll be listening.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be listening on the way home. Dan, are you, you're not producing that as well, are you?
No, sir.
All right. I didn't know if you had to. Well, we know, because you're one of these dedicated employees where they'll go, hey, I know you've been here 15 hours, but can you produce another hour? It's only another hour. And you would say yes. That's the kind of guy you are. So I don't know.
I do my best sometimes.
Listen, you do fine. You do a heck of a job. All right, so we're talking about screen time and the debate that's going on, and wondering how much screen time. And the problem was that they were the American Association of Pediatrics was focusing on young children, 2 to 5 years old, and being very vague about older kids. And that now new research has come out and said that perhaps more screen time is related to anxiety and depression, and that, you know, we've got to make sure that kids are not spending too much time. Well, then another study came out and said it wasn't the little kids that were having these problems, that if little kids were watching, spending a lot of time on the screen, they weren't being more, they weren't more depressed and anxious. It was probably the older kids. So another study comes out and it says, all right, well, now we're looking at kids who are up to age 17. And after 1 hour of 1 hour a day of use, children and teenagers who spend more time on screens were lower in psychological well-being. This is something you need to pay attention to if you're a parent, and it should scare you. It scares me, and my daughter is old and grown. Not old, she's not old, she's 22, but she's grown. They were less curious and more easily distracted and had more difficult time making friends, managing their anger, and finishing tasks. I'm going to say this again. If you have a child who is on there in front of screen time, and this is older kids, older than five, children and teenagers who spent more time on screens were lower in psychological well-being. That's all you need to hear. All right, we got to figure out a way. And how do we do that? I don't know. How do we get our kids off of the screen? You say, okay, you can only do it for an hour a day. Well, I've already spent X amount of time at school on my device. Does that count? Because it does isolate the kids. You know, if you're on your iPad in school, you're working all by yourself. Teenagers who spent an excessive amount of time on screen were twice as likely to have been diagnosed with anxiety or depression. So this generation does spend an extraordinary amount of time on screen, up to 9 hours a day on average. So how do we figure out that math? How do we make that right? If we know the kids are spending 9 hours a day on the screen, and we also know that studies show that if they spend more than an hour, they could be in psychological trouble. I don't know.
There is, I heard it on a podcast a while back, but there...
Well, then it's true.
That's how I feel about it. That one of the former founders of Google, he suggested what he's been doing in his life is there are, on all the devices, iPads and, you know, tablets and phones, yeah, and computers, you can change the settings so that the display is washed of all color. You know, everything's black and white.
I heard John Williams talking about this. He went, he did that too.
The guy said after about a week of doing that, he was spending naturally just much less time looking at screens because it, you know, it's just less addictive to you to stay looking at it.
Huh. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. But what if I'm a guy who loves old timey movies? So now I went from only looking at my phone briefly to now everything looks like North by Northwest.
Right.
So I'm fascinated by my phone.
It's more intriguing.
Oh, yeah. I know. My whole life is not like film noir now. Everything is foggy. There's jazz music playing. I got a fedora, a dame with nice walking sticks. It's all perfect because my whole life is in black and white.
One of those cigarette holders.
Of course. She's a femme fatale.
Mm-hmm.
She's got the gloves that go up over her elbows. Probably a little hat with the veil that covers her, you know, the lace that covers her eyes. Mm-hmm. Oh, she's looking dangerous.
And you're always launching into monologues, looking at an imaginary camera.
Yeah, I've got stuff to do. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting on my fire escape with a saxophone. Can't play it, but I look good in a muscle tee, mm-hmm, you know, as I'm just sitting there. That's how we do it. I don't know, Don. It's every problem, or I guess every solution, it can backfire.
True.
Nothing is 100%. That's all we're saying.
That's true.
Is that all we're saying? Mm-hmm. Sure, that's all I'm saying. Why not? Did you see this? Now, this is a story I know the newsroom has been covering. The story about the couple that supposedly gave the homeless guy who supposedly gave this couple $20, his last $20, and then they did a GoFundMe and they raised $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then the homeless guy was like, they didn't give me my money. They gave me the wrong car, blah, blah, blah. Well, they were all charged in crimes the other day, and now the woman involved has been suspended from her state job.
Yep.
Oh, my. See, you can't try to defraud people and then keep your job. She's a New Jersey woman accused of a GoFundMe scam involving her boyfriend and a homeless man. You know that. Caitlin McClure is her name. She worked as a receptionist for the New Jersey Department of Transportation. She was charged alongside her boyfriend, Mark D'Amico, and a homeless veteran, Johnny Bobbitt, for theft and deception. And depending on what story, you know, they were all in cahoots. Then I read a story that they met him at a casino, and that's where the plot was hatched. It all circles back to the casinos. He was outside panhandling, and that's where they met. There's a lot of different stories going around.
Mm-hmm.
But McClure and D'Amico shared the story of a GoFundMe on how Bobby, you know the story, used his last $20 to get gas for McClure's car when she ran out, which sounded, you know, sounded something out of a Frank Capra movie to me. I never quite bought it.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm skeptical.
I kind of feel the same way as you, Brian. Like, I hear $20, you know, from a homeless guy. It's like, if it was like $5, I mean, that's one thing.
Yeah, would the, you know, $20 seems like he'd have more to do with it.
Yeah, that's what I would think. You know, and they said, like, it's his last, like.
Last 20. You're going to hold on to that last 20.
Yeah.
Because, listen, thank God I'm not homeless. It's a horrible life. So I'm guessing if you've been homeless for a while, some of your humanity has probably been beaten out of you through no fault of your own, just your circumstance. And to go, well, here's a woman who ran out of gas, which I am always amazed when people run out of gas. I've only done it one time in my many years. And that was because I was in a remote area of the Dakotas, and I kept thinking there was going to be an exit with a gas station, and there wasn't. And I kept driving, and I'm like, there's got to. And at that point, what can you do? You can't just stop and stand there and cry. You got to keep driving, hoping that there's a town somewhere.
Boy, that's the beginning of a horror movie right there, Brian.
Oh, man. I run out of gas. But let me tell you this. I couldn't have picked a more optimum place to run out of gas if I had written it up. So I'm just about to pull into, I think it was Grand Forks, North Dakota. And I'm on the interstate, and I'm seeing, you know, there's no exit coming up. And now I'm about to get into construction. And I know this sounds like I'm just heaping on more things, more story elements to make it more interesting, but it's not. And I'm like, all right, this is it. And all of a sudden, clink, 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 I'm out, and I coast over. I'm on the shoulder, and across the interstate, there is a road crew from the state, and they have a big water truck and a big fuel truck.
Oh, man.
And the guys come over, and they're like, what happened? I go, I'm out of gas. And they go, oh, we'll give you a little bit. So they gave me like 5 gallons of gas.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, well, this one I was doing comedy. I'm like, here's where I'm going to be. Please come out, blah, blah, blah. I never saw them again, but these guys saved my life.
That's ideal.
Yeah, and, you know, none of us had to do a GoFundMe. It was just very nice. Well, they had a whole truck of gas, so they weren't, you know, and it wasn't their gas, but they were very generous and very helpful.
And it wasn't their last $20
of
gas.
No, not at all. So anyway, she claims she was unaware of the scam the entire time, and the whole plot was planned by her boyfriend. Right.
Yeah.
Her lawyer says she didn't understand or appreciate the fact that this might very well be a crime. You're lying.
It's Lady Macbeth stuff right there.
You are lying. Of course you knew. Of course you knew. Oh, all right. Just an update. Quick, Dan. I know we're late, but I got to give this update. Hello again. No catfishing going on. I'm no longer watching The Grinch Muted. I'm browsing the online sales. ThinkGeek, among others, while listening to WGN. All right. Fantastic. Thank you, 847.
Nice.
Thank you for putting our minds at ease.
Cool.
Enjoy the rest of your Black Friday shopping.
All tied at 16. Here comes Stafford.
Yeah, the Bears 23-16 winners over the Lions. The Thanksgiving showdown, another divisional win. The Bears now sit at 8-3. Andy Mazur is in sports again this morning, and he is nice enough to jump on. We all predicted last night, Andy, that everything was going to be. Well, we predicted the Bears would win. We weren't sure about Chad Daniel. We were, you know, his confidence was very high. We admired that, and yet we were worried. And the first couple series made that worry seem like it was well placed.
Yeah, it didn't. Didn't start exactly the way you wanted it to start. A couple 3-and-outs, but you know, and I didn't really even realize it until after the game when I was listening to Coach Nagy talking a little bit. But you know, Daniel's got no reps at all this week because they had such a short week.
Right? Yeah, they didn't. Yeah,
88 hours basically in between the end of the Vikings game and the beginning of the Lions game, and all he did was they had a walkthrough. So he was throwing half speed basically to these guys on their routes. So the last meaningful reps that Daniel got we're in the preseason in against Kansas City.
Well, then at that, when that's the case, you go, all right, well, then it's understandable that your first couple series are not going to be the best.
Yeah.
So, and they bounce back.
Well, they did bounce back. I mean, this is a team that it's kind of hard to describe because the defense really sets the tone.
Yes.
And the defense really did set the tone again. I mean, Eddie Jackson, again, finds the end zone of pick six. And,
most in the league right now, isn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous. He's got five in his career. And Kyle Fuller with a big interception at the end.
A huge interception at the end.
I mean, you kind of knew that Matt Stafford was going to, choke a little bit there. Yeah.
He loves to throw picks in prime time.
Listen, we're Chicago. We can say the Detroit quarterback choked.
I was trying to think of a friendlier way to say something else, and I decided not to.
Pooped the bed?
Something like that.
Okay.
I think we talked about it yesterday. I really thought that the running game was going to be more featured, but it really wasn't because what they do, their running game is basically screen passes to Tariq Cohen.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah,
so they didn't really need it.
I was expecting more handoffs today, too, especially considering Daniels without the reps this week. You think that there's going to be a bunch of handoffs, like that'd be a high percentage of the offense.
Yeah, but then he goes on a tear where he's completing, five in a row, and things are moving along, and everything's looking good. But again, Andy, you made this point last night, and you just made it again. The defense, it's so nice to have another defensive powerhouse team. Because offense is great. You need the offense. You want a flashy offense. But defense is what's winning.
Yeah, and you often find that the teams that go further and further and further are the ones that have the best defenses. Mm-hmm. And because later in the year it's hard to run offense when it gets colder.
Yeah,
and you can always depend on your defense. I like what I see. I like what I see not only because Khalil Mack is a one man wrecking crew sometimes, but again the attention that teams have to pay to him leaves Akeem Hicks free, leaves Roquan Smith free, leaves Danny Trevathan free. So there's a lot of guys that are benefiting. Leonard Floyd, and of course the secondary flourishing because of these quick passes that the quarterbacks have to throw because he's got three guys in his face.
Yeah, they're getting hunted down immediately. Are you a fan of these celebrations? I am. I love the Temptations dance today.
That was pretty good.
I like the rowing last week.
Mm-hmm.
The composer as well when he was doing the orchestra thing, conducting.
I like having a team with a little personality.
I do, too. And I think that the league finally got smart in allowing these kind of situations as long as you don't use a prop, which is yesterday in the Dallas game. I don't know if you saw that. But
I did.
Dak Prescott scored a touchdown, and they had this big, gigantic Salvation Army kettle.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
His lineman picked him up and put him in it. And that drew a flag because it's technically a prop.
Well, Tariq Cohen did put $21 after his touchdown into the pot, and that also kind of counts, doesn't it?
I guess it probably should have. But
I mean, I'm glad.
It's a charitable donation. If the league finds him for that,
it was tax deductible.
Yes, there's going to be a lot of trouble if the league goes. If the league says you can't make deductions.
Sorry, you cannot make this donation.
That's
here.
A good point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the thing to really take into consideration, and Matt Nagy was really stressing this after the game yesterday as well, that this easily could have been one of those games the guys came in and like, well, it was the shortest turnaround in NFL history, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
They didn't look like that at all. Do you realize now they won 3 division games within 12 days?
Yes, yep. It's amazing. And they, they're leading the division by, they've got 3 games
it's
over
two
the
games now.
2 games, yeah. Two full games.
And the other stat that I heard yesterday, which is just absolutely amazing, and I wish I could tell Dan Hampton this because he would really enjoy this. In 12 days, Matt Nagy has equaled the amount of division wins that John Fox had in his entire stay.
Is that right?
That's fantastic.
3.
In 12 days.
How many years? Was it 2 years?
John Fox was a coach? 3.
Like 3 years? Yeah, 3. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Also, fun fact, the Bears defense now has more interceptions than it has allowed passing touchdowns.
20 and 19 is what that total is at this point.
That's crazy.
And they don't show any, barring injury, they don't show any signs of slowing down. I mean, we were talking about the four. I brought up the fourth quarter early in the season last night. They're just coming at you. And I think we've seen this before. When a defense is that ferocious, it feeds on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to get more ferocious week to week because they've gotten, it's like an animal. You get a taste of blood, you're going to keep coming after it.
Yeah, and we talked yesterday, too, about the fourth quarter situation, the second half. with the defense kind of on its heels. And that was a point of emphasis this week. I don't know if you caught any of the postgame of Eddie Jackson, but he said, listen, Vic Fangio was pretty much stressing staying in the game third and fourth quarter. And that was top of mind for a lot of guys, he admitted, out on that field as they were playing in the third and fourth quarter at Ford Field, which is not an exactly an easy place for the Bears to play.
No.
Or for any opponent, for that matter. And they finished the job. I mean, like I said, Kyle Fuller with the big big interception at the end of the game to really put it out of reach and put put the final exclamation point on it. But 8-3, the last time you saw, last time they were 8-3 to start a season, 2012.
Wow, that is a long time ago. Yeah.
Doesn't seem like that long ago. That's 6 years.
Yeah, I know, but it's been a long 6 years for suffering Bear fans.
Yes, indeed,
who have not been happy. Now we got 2 weeks. Or a week from Sunday, they go to New York to take on the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
That
should be a W.
Yeah, and totally. Then it's the Rams.
And that's the only thing you worry about. The only thing you worry about is looking past the Giants. But I don't believe that this coaching staff allows that kind of thing to go on.
It doesn't seem like it, the way they talk and the way the attitude of the players when you hear them in their interviews. It seems like they're professionals. Mm-hmm. They know they're supposed to come out and do this. Do you think there's been a mindset that, listen, everything is new this year? We have to prove that, you know, Ryan Pace's faith in us, whether it's the players or the coaching staff. There was more to prove this year than maybe last year when everybody knew it was John Fox's last year and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, well, I think the tide turned with the Khalil Mack trade. I really do.
How much is John Gruden kicking himself?
You know what? He should be kicking himself right back to the broadcast.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though. He doesn't seem like he is from the interviews and stuff.
He
seems like, you know, he kind of at the beginning was all like, oh, you know, hey, Mac's doing well. Wow, that's interesting. But then he starts saying things like, oh, we need a pass rush, and he guts the rest of the team. That guy, I think he's testing the strength of his 10-year contract already, isn't he?
Yeah, it was a dumb move. It was a dumb move, and I saw lots of, what do you call those, memes on the internet yesterday.
Yeah.
On Thanksgiving, thanking John Gruden.
Yeah.
Bears fans John Gruden for Khalil Mack.
Well, and it's true. So your point was, Andy, that was when the turnaround
came.
Yeah,
I think that's
when they brought in Khalil Mack. And you saw, I mean, when news of the signing came out, a lot of the players seemed very energized news.
And they should have been, because this is this guy, you know, and he's young and he's going to be around for a while. And he just basically changed the attitude and the tone and the, you know, the mindset around Hallis Hall, which had been ho-hum for the last, Trestman and Fox years, which were easily and forgettable. But it kind of changed the culture a little bit around what was expected up in Lake Forest. And I think it just reiterated the plan that Matt Nagy and the new coaching staff really wanted to get across, was that, listen, the other stuff's in the past. We can't worry about that. We can't do anything about it. We got to look forward here and chart our own course. And so far, knock on wood, so good.
Yeah, 8-3 is more than a lot of people were predicting.
That was more than I was predicting. Yeah. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah, I was, you know.
And the thing with Mack is that it's like, you know, at the beginning when the trade was made, what was it, 2 first-round picks or whatever, and people debate on how worth it that is. But you look at, I mean, you look at the production he's already had this season, and the, you know, however many of the first-round picks from the last however many years you want to go in with the Bears, how many of them have any of the production like Mack has had?
Yeah.
You know, those draft picks are, the potential is great, but when you've got a game changer like him, I think there's really no price that's too high.
Yeah, but the potential to screw up a first round draft pick is also there. So get rid of that and, you know, go with a proven
guy who's going to come in. Looking ahead to New York, Mitch should be, by all accounts, should be ready to go.
They're hoping. You know, there were some that were talking yesterday about the fact that if this had been a Sunday game rather than a Thursday afternoon game, that there would have been a more likelihood of Mitch playing.
Okay.
But Nagy, after the game yesterday, saying it's still kind of a day-to-day situation. He's checking in with Trubisky every day to hear about what kind of pain he's in right at that point. You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if he didn't play against the Giants and got completely and totally healthy for the Rams. It's very not unlike the situation with Khalil Mack with the ankle, where you hold him out for a couple of weeks, and now he's back to being Khalil Mack again.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. And why risk it in a game that, if you don't look past it on paper, mm-hmm. it should be, like you said, it should be an easy W.
Yeah, because the big game is the following week.
Right, exactly. So we'll see. When do they go back? I'm sure they've got today off. Are they,
oh, yeah, they're off today.
Till...
They're off today. And actually, Matt Nagy told them they don't have to be back into the building until Tuesday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're going to be they're going to get the whole weekend off.
Good.
And all of Monday off, and then report back. Usually Tuesday's the off day, but he switched it from Tuesday to Monday.
Well, as you said, the turnaround was very fast.
Yeah, quickest in NFL history.
So now they get some rest, and they can rest knowing that they sit atop the division, 8-3. Very nice. What are we looking at today, Andy, as you start putting together your sports for the rest of the morning?
Well, of course, we'll recap the Bears. We've got the Blackhawks tonight trying to win their second game on their three-game road trip here. They're going to be in a real tough place. Tampa Bay, the Lightning, the top team in the Eastern Conference, they have 31 points and lead the Atlantic Division. Northwestern, the basketball team lost its first game last
right.
night. A thud to Fresno State. They'll be back at it this afternoon against LaSalle. And you know what else is going on today in Las Vegas?
Huh.
Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, they have their match today for $9 million.
That should be mic'd up.
Wow.
Man. I want to hear what those guys are saying to each other throughout
it,
that.
Well, if you want to see it, you got to pay $19.99 to watch it on pay-per-view. That's the only way you can get it. The interesting thing is there have already been and will be more side bets during this thing. Phil Mickelson has bet Tiger Woods $200,000 that Phil will birdie hole number one.
Wow.
That is confidence, man.
Mm-hmm.
$200,000.
I mean,
hole number one.
Yeah, and Vegas, you know, it being in Vegas and Vegas being Vegas, there's tons of prop bets already surrounding this thing. Like, how many times will Tiger Woods swear? How many times will he twirl his club? How many times will Phil Mickelson look like he just missed a putt? It's crazy to think about what's going on here. And you know, these guys are, they've always been rivals.
Sure.
But they're easily, I would think, the top two players of the generation. So it's kind of cool to watch these guys go at it a little bit.
That's going
to
be amazing. I hope whoever wins that first hole bet has to pay up right there,
you know,
before the second tee box.
And you know what it is? They're going to keep in the fine tradition of the PGA. They're going to give the guy another real big check. It's going to be that big cardboard check. Go ahead, take it to the bank and cash this.
Yeah, see how that works out for you. Andy, thank you so much for jumping on. Andy will be handling sports all morning. Patty Vasquez is in for Steve Cochran this morning, so you can hear Andy taking care of all that business. We've got to do a little something, and then coming up are the stories that matter with Don Kleppen from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Hey, my turn again. Very exciting. Brian Noonan in for Nick. Nick will be back on Monday. Thank you again for spending your week with us. We have had a lovely time. Dan, once again, thank you for all your work this week. Kudos on not only the White Castle stuffing from your uncle, but the great bookings, the great support. It's been a fun week.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. It was a lot of fun.
Now, I know this is probably not the day to talk about this or to bring this up, it's not the fact that Mark Carmen is coming in to do the opening bell. We are very excited about that. I was hoping Carm would come in and explain his business acumen before we got out of here, but he is crunching the numbers. He is assessing business, you know, trends. Not the day to do it because we just, everybody yesterday ate a gluttonous amount of food for Thanksgiving, but a new survey ranks the fattest states in the country based on a 25 different metrics, walking or exercise, they based it on weight, they based it on all of this, and the bad news is that Illinois, of course, made the list because we are one of the 50 states. Good news is we're not number one. That honor goes to Mississippi.
Whoa, Mississippi?
People in Mississippi are the quote-unquote fattest state. They rate number one in obesity and overweight prevalence. They are number two in health consequences, and they are number three in the food and fitness rank. So they are not doing good in Mississippi, followed closely by West Virginia. So here are the top five fattest. We did not make the top five, so yay, Illinois. Number five, Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, West Virginia, and Virginia. Now,
wow.
I will tell you all of our neighboring states did worse than us.
Nice.
Yes, so we are still good. Indiana, the Hoosiers, number 11. They are the 11th fattest state. So if you are in Indiana right now, you live there, we love you. I used to live in Northwest Indiana. You know, today maybe take a walk. That's all. Try to watch it. Michigan comes in at 15. Iowa is the 18th fattest state. Our friends just to the north, Wisconsin, is 21st. And Illinois, thankfully, not even in the top half. We are number 28. We are the 28th fattest state.
Nice.
According to this new survey by the Physical Activity Council. So
I gotta say, I would have expected both Illinois and Wisconsin to be a lot closer to the top there.
Yeah, I don't know. Wisconsin, maybe, but I think I'm not surprised by the South. A lot of things are deep fried down there.
Yeah, the Southern comfort.
I've spent a lot of time down in New Orleans and down in that area, and it's. That food is delicious, and it'll kill you because it's all deep fried. There's a lot of creamy sauces, a lot of things like that. Speaking of comfort food, they also, as they went through this and they were talking to people, they talked about the most popular comfort food by state. And I don't know if this is true. I think sometimes these lists just go with the stereotypical results, because Illinois' favorite comfort food, according to them, is deep dish pizza. Now, a lot of people love deep dish pizza. A lot of people don't love deep dish pizza, I don't think. And downstate, it's not nearly as popular as it is here in Chicago. So they say, you know, part of the reason we are how we are is because our favorite comfort food is deep dish pizza at 329 calories per serving. So I don't believe that. Indiana, they say sugar cream pie. And Iowa, it's loose meat sandwiches.
Loose meat sandwiches.
Yeah, you ever had a loose meat sandwich? It's like a sloppy Joe kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Meat. Sure.
Now that's 278 calories. This Indiana pie, this sugar cream pie, 400 calories a slice.
Whew.
So, yeah. In Minnesota, supposedly their favorite comfort food is tater tot hot dish. That used to be your dancer name, wasn't it, Dan? When you worked at Chippendales for a short time in your misspent youth, you were Tater Tot Hot Dish.
Tater Tot Hot Dish.
Tater Tot Hot Dish.
It's not bad.
Come out, you'd have your tater tots in strategic positions, and then you just cover yourself in some sort of cheesy sauce. It was like Flashdance on acid.
Southern ladies loved it.
Oh, sure they did. The people in Minnesota, he was huge. He'd go tell the people how you would go up on a big Twin Cities tour, and you'd make enough in a weekend to last a year.
I gave a new meaning to the term Minnesota nice.
Oh, yeah, you did. And you were not passive-aggressive about it. You were straight-up aggressive about it. All right, we've got to take a quick break. Then we got to get out of here. The stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio will be happening in just a moment on WGN.